You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows like us at podcast.hyperx.com.
This week in Retronauts, the fastest thing alive meets the slowest thing alive, talking about reading. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another disastrous episode of Retronauts, presented by me, Stuart Gipp. This time we're going... Now, I've been wanting to do Sonic episodes for a long time, but it felt like it would be cheeky to just dive straight in with Sonic and then persist, because people would eventually say, Stuart, we're bored of Sonic now. We'd like to hear about something else. And I would be forced to insist that they shut up and put a sock in it and never email us again. So here we are talking about something quite controversial. Is that right? There's a bit of a furore around these things, isn't there? There's a very obsessed sort of fan base who are very upset about almost every aspect of all
much.
Yeah. So I couldn't do this alone, despite the fact I've read so many Sonic comics that I have neglected almost all the great works of literature in favor of them. It's, as you can hear, I'm going to introduce him first because he's geographically close to me. That's how it works. And it's Dave Ballmer again, as you probably guessed.
Again.
Yeah. We have trouble getting guests.
No, but this time I've got, like, qualifications to bring
to bear. Yeah, yeah. Well, I had to get him because we're going to be talking about the UK Sonic the Comic. And this man is one of the hosts of, what was it called again, Dave?
I'll try and remember. It's Sonic the Comic, the podcast is what it's called.
Oh, that's a good name.
It's the film. Well,
do you know what? It took us so, not a joke, it took us so long to think of that
Why?
Name.
Why would it take long to think of
we
that?
We were like, but what shall we call it? And we were trying to come up with, like, clever names.
Oh, a funny, clever name. Yeah, I get
yeah,
it.
And we were trying to go, or we were like, oh, we'll call it the Retro Orbital Chaos Cast. And we're like, no, nobody will know what that means.
Oh, God.
I would have known, but I would have still been bad.
That's the thing. The coolest people in the world would have known, and then three people in the whole world would listen.
The coolest people in the world.
Yeah. And the people who know what the retro chaos compressor is by me and Chris's standards, and nobody else. And
you guys
all
are kind of cool. That's fair.
No, the real reason we didn't call it Sonic the Comic the Podcast is we were absolutely sure that someone had already done that, and they had.
We did. Me and Luke and some other people did one called Sonic the Podcast.
No, exactly.
Close.
That's totally different. Having heard of that, we thought that was called Sonic the Comic the Podcast, and it wasn't. And that was where we were confused. You see,
I can see. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm at this point prepared to say that you guys have the definitive Sonic the Comic podcast, having covered how many issues now?
Loads. We're up to. I think I'm about to release episode 78, but we've recorded up to like 80.
Blimey, you're right in the good stuff now.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, that's enough of you and me talking. You know how it is. Our other guest is a first time on Retronauts, I believe, unless there's been some obtuse time that I've forgotten. I'm not sure where she's from. Where are you from? Sorry?
I'm from sunny Florida.
Oh, what? That's so cool, man. That's a holiday place. I know, there's Disney.
Yeah, I'm from Daytona Beach. So it's
what? Like the game? That's
just a name from games.
Yeah. It's a Sega game.
Why don't you introduce yourself, actually? That would probably be that.
Are you from the Miracle Planet?
So... hi, I'm Bobby Schroeder, making my debut here on Retronauts. I am here mostly because I run the blog Thanks Ken Penders, which before anyone gets any ideas, the name is sarcastic. It was a joke. And now I can't change it because Tumblr doesn't let you change your blog URL without breaking like every single link to the blog ever. But anyway, it's a retrospective blog on the Archie Sonic comics that I've been running since 2014.
It's extremely good. And
you're
exhaustive.
A Sonic comic superstar, as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, apparently.
Accidental. I've read all of it. Oh, not all of it, because I haven't read some of the recent stuff yet. I apologize. Yeah. But it particularly switched me on to how fun the Sonic X comics were, because I just ignored them. The only one I didn't ignore, and this makes me sound like a terrible deviant, is the hilarious one where the cover is just a really anatomically like detailed drawing of Rouge's bottom.
What? Oh,
like, God. Yeah, seriously. It's like the artist just went, here we go. Here we go,
it's
lads.
Not just a close-up, but it's like, no. It definitely stands out.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this when I got to that issue?
I own, that's the only one I own, because I saw it on the shelf and I just was so incredulous that I had to buy it.
That's right. And did you make that noise you make when you are feeling incredulous, where you go...
Yeah, I did. I did my incredulity noise face. And actions
and leg rub, yeah,
and yeah, I did the Vic Reeves leg rub as well. That's one for the old Americans, a reference to Shooting Stars. You're gonna love this. They've complained that it's too British, you know.
Have they? Good, oh, good,
yeah, that's what we want. Anyway, yes, the as we have our sort of respective comics geniuses here and me to make them seem all the more intelligent by comparison. I think that because we're going to cover the Archie comics, we're going to cover the UK Sonic the Comic, also known by some people as Fleetway for some reason. It's because it's made by Fleetway, but yeah.
I suppose we call the other one Archie, so.
Yeah,
no, that's a fair point, actually. Yeah.
Which is a stupid thing to call it, because that is itself an existing comic that they make.
Yeah.
Well, they just titled it Sonic the Hedgehog, so.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then also we're talking about the also called Sonic the Hedgehog IDW comics of recent years. I want to say 2018 started.
Yeah.
But we'll get into all of that. Now, it's best, I think, to kick off with Archie, because I want to say that was they came first with the Sonic miniseries.
I think so.
I haven't actually checked this. I made some notes and I didn't check possibly the most important thing of all, whether it came first. It comes first alphabetically. There's my justification. Archie being the, first letter of the alphabet. A.
The letter Archie.
The letter Archie. But just as a potted sort of, a potted history, my favorite kind of history. And it's, February 1993, it started, which I think might have been around the same time as Sonic the Comic, actually.
Sonic the Comic was May 1993, although I can't tell you when the little preview issue came out.
That was in 2000 AD, was it?
Sorry, genuinely for a moment there, I thought you meant the year. I'm like, no, 1993.
No, the preview comic came, was it with 2000 AD?
Well, it may have been. My copy came with came staple to Thunderbirds.
Oh, wow, Thunderbirds. Mm. Now we're talking. Maybe a Thunderbirds episode later, but I digress. Yes, there was a sort of a gag series of these Archie comics back in February 1983. I put down in the notes sort of to test the waters, but I have no idea if that's true. It must have sold decently because it started its first proper monthly issue in July 1993. That's just a few months after the last one, or just a month after the last one, if they were February, March, April, May, you know. Now, was that when Scott Shaw was drawing them? I don't actually recall.
So Scott Shaw was drawing the original miniseries.
Yeah.
And I thought the work was pretty good.
I really like Scott Shaw.
Yeah.
His stuff. I used to read Simpsons comics obsessively, and he turned in some really absurd stories for them with really odd off-model drawings, but they were a lot of fun. That original miniseries, did they introduce any of the continuity that were at all, like the Freedom Fighters, were they in it, or was it mostly just...
Well, they started to introduce it, but it was kind of a weird mishmash, because apparently they were told, include the Freedom Fighters from Sat AM. I'm assuming we don't have to introduce that cartoon. Anyone who's listening to this will know, probably. Yeah. But they were told to match the tone of Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. So, right from the start, because I think Sega thought, or whoever thought, that would be the more popular cartoon, because it was airing weekdays instead of once a week. So, like, oh, kids will be watching that more, so they'll want that more. So, it was like this gag comic, lots of short stories and like one page gag strips in between, and like all sorts of goofy things. There were like puzzle activities sometimes.
It sounds brilliant. Genuinely, I would love to read that again.
Yeah.
I think I do have it. There's like a trade called Sonic Beginnings, and I think it's got the whole miniseries in it. And I have that knocking around somewhere. The only other Archie trades I had, I got rid of. And then now I look at the prices of them on eBay and I'm sort of like...
I know. I tried to get them recently and I was like,
oh boy.
Mistake. Yeah, well, mistake.
I waited a long time to start making the trades and then they had to cut it off because, of, well, you know. But I guess we'll get to that.
I do wonder if it's ever going to see the light again, even in reprint form, like omnibus form or something.
There's like rumblings. I mean... I'll avoid getting into a million tangents about things. Ken Penders has said on Twitter, but he has been saying that he is trying to put together a series of hardcover omnibuses of the series with the original creators. But I mean, we have no idea if that'll ever actually happen.
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe that might not be true.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to believe he just said it to get attention.
Yeah.
Seems to be the reason that he says a lot of things nowadays. Good old Ken. We haven't even got to Ken Penders yet, and we're already talking about Ken Penders. But no, I would say basically 290 monthly issues. I think there were two more either completed or scripted or lined, but they didn't get released. Because I remember seeing like the covers for them in, what's it called? Solicitations, that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that 290 is still the longest running comic based on a third party like franchise. I think it's the record. They beat Conan the Barbarian because that was only 275 or something. I'm not sure if it's been beaten by anything. Probably if it has, it's probably by like some Donald Duck thing or like in like Europe or something because that's really unpopular. But I guess we'll never know. If any of the Retronauts listeners know whether or not a European Donald Duck comic has beaten the record for Sonic the Archie comic, please write in and let me know. You know, every time I say these things and I say write in and let me know, no one ever does. They just don't respond to my absurd requests.
That's how inconsiderate.
I would argue, before we get into our own sort of... no, you know what? Actually, we should get into that before, because I originally planned to open with this, so we're just going to do it now. This is how... This is what we call expert-level planning. I'm going to ask... yes, I'll start with you, Bobby, because you're here for the first time. How did you discover Sonic comics? And like, how did you get into them? Or when did you get into them, et cetera, et cetera? Like, what's your history with these comics outside of, you know, blogging them extensively?
Well, I have kind of a weird route into getting into Sonic in general, because it was the summer of 2002. I was 8 years old, which dates me compared to you two. But
yeah, same age. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't really have a lot of game consoles at the time. I had like my mom's old SNES. So I wasn't playing the games or anything, but I caught The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog in reruns on Toon Disney, I think. And I don't know what it was, but somehow little 8 year old me was like, oh, this is the best cartoon I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty great cartoon.
It's good.
It is a fun cartoon, but I don't know. I think these days I'm mostly fond of it for it reminding me of various YouTube poops. But that was all I knew Sonic from at the time. And then one day I was at a flea market with my parents just randomly, and I stumble across Archie Sonic the Hedgehog issue number 13, which was very old at the time. And I had no idea that this existed. I'm like, oh my God, I have to have this. I can't believe they make comics about Sonic, this character who's from this cartoon. And it was, an interesting coincidence that my first issue was, in fact, the issue where Ken Penders introduces Knuckles.
Oh, my goodness.
Destiny. Yeah. But that was a really old issue at the time. So then after that, I picked up... Well, I didn't know if they were still making them. I just had this one random issue. So my dad went to a comic store later, like a week later or something, and he picked up 100 issues later, issue 113. I'm like, oh, my God, they're still making these. So I started reading from there. And I had no idea at the time that that was one of the worst issues they ever released.
may I ask which one that was? So
issue 113 is infamous for being, number one, it's just a straight adaptation of an episode of Sat AM, the one with the wolf pack, if anyone remembers the show.
They did that as late as 113. That seems odd.
It was odd. It was pretty blatantly filler. But number two, it was drawn by the beloved artist or artists, Many Hands.
Oh, Many Hands! Is it, yes. Is it the Many Hands one, or is it? Or are there more than...
There's two Many Hands issues, and this is the second one.
I think I must be thinking of the earlier one, where there's whole pages go by without anyone really drawing anything.
Yes. Yeah, the issue where it's a battle in snow, so it's just all white with dialogue, and like a snowflake pattern. Yeah, but this one, so it was like cobbled together by whoever in a rush, seemingly. It's got the ugliest art you've ever seen of Sonic. Like, literally, this isn't the only issue where you can say this, but like, if you compare the art that the kids were sending in to the fan art page, it was better. Not a joke.
Wow.
But I had no idea. I was just like, wow, look, another comic with Sonic in it.
See, I would have thought if you had many hands, you would be an excellent artist.
Yeah, you'd be better.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of speculation about who Many Hands really was, but the consensus seems to be it was the editor at the time, just cobbling together whatever. Some other people were probably involved. But
I thought initially that you were saying mini hands. This is an actual Alan Smithy style signature.
Yeah, thing they used to do in Archie when they were proud of what they'd done.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no one wanted their name on that.
But you never really saw that on Reggie and Me or like any of those comics, which are obviously incredible. Oh, wow. I didn't know about this Alan Smithy thing. And I should know because I've read that whole block, but in my defense, it was a long time ago. So sorry, following that, did you just pick it up monthly from that point on? Or was it a sometimes comic?
Yeah. So at that point, I started following month to month, and it was an odd time to start following it. But I guess it kind of worked out because the two issues I started with were like throwbacks to the early 90s stuff that they were kind of experimenting with at the time, kind of going simpler after a long period of much more complex and at times dark stories. But then they went right back to that, of course.
I was gonna say they absolutely did.
So they kind of weaned me onto it.
Wow, that's almost cruel of them. I can't believe that. I mean, the odds of picking up those particular issues, man. Wow. Dave, Bulma, you, who is here also.
Yep.
Please regale us with the story of how you discovered Sonic comics and your history with them. But please take less than half an hour.
Okay. Everyone,
you know, I say that with love in my heart. Love in my heart when I say these things.
No, you're fully accurate. No, the simple version is that Manana used to come round with a comic and some pick and mix for us on what I believe was Fridays or maybe Saturdays. And this one time she happened to bring a Thunderbirds comic that had this little comic stapled to it, which was what it was it's a preview version of the first issue of the upcoming Sonic the Comic. And so it had the first page of all, I think, four or three strips that were going to be in that issue. Just the first page without any, you know, not, they hadn't put any thought into where those pages end. It's just literally, there's the first page. Try, if you want more, come and get the comic.
Yeah, here's like 1/5 of the comic.
And I really, really wanted more. Like, it really did the trick. I remember saying out loud, "Oh, now this is just what I need," because I knew about the game. I didn't know the game well. I didn't have it until ages later.
Of course, you said that out loud.
Yeah, and I was right too.
Yes. Yeah. No, you were not wrong. You were not wrong.
And I, my interest in Sonic up till that point was just like, oh yeah, he's the new thing. You know, there's the new game thing. I'm interested in that. That's the future. I want that one day. And I'd played it in a shop, you know, when I played it in a shop, I got so excited that I went running round and round the shop faster than I'd ever run before.
And or since.
And I do have somewhere a couple of drawings of Sonic that I'd done just at school when I was bored. Just remembering, like, oh, I reckon he looks a bit like this, and now here he is as an old man, just like variations on a theme.
Were they drawings of Sonic having sex with a girl version of Sonic with a big sensor bar over the middle of it so that you couldn't see what was happening?
Bobby, I assure you he's making a callback to something we've talked about before and not just being really weird.
I'm introducing continuity. I'm introducing continuity to Retronauts, like Archie Comics.
It's that I did that with Zool, and it was very funny of me. And
his geography, teacher saw it and thought it was funny and cool.
It was. And there you go. And then and after that, when the comic came out, that was it. I never missed an... I may have missed one issue ever in the entire run.
That must have been devastating to miss an issue.
It must have been. I think it was... I don't think I really noticed. So it must have been one of the really late on ones where it was reruns or whatever.
Well, you were still getting it even when it was doing reprints.
Up to a point, I think I stopped when the Sonic Adventure adaptation happened and it was clearly over. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Oh man, that adaptation. We'll have to talk about that in more detail. But yes, I can't believe you missed an issue. That makes me feel so sad.
Well, I think I've got it now because, of course, I now have Abby's collection in the house as well. So if we put the two together, I think we've got a complete run.
I sold all my STCs to someone for a very low price.
Mm.
And sometimes I think, I wish I hadn't sold those STCs.
I have a version of that, which was that just when, like, I think issue 2 came out,
Robifox, that was my first issue.
I had two copies of issue 1 because we bought our own and then Nana showed up with it the next week. So I had two. Yeah. So I gave one of them to my friend. And I remember, because he'd missed it and he was interested in issue 2. And I remember getting it out of my bedroom drawer where it was pristinely laid out and handing it over to him carefully. And of course, the thing is, my copy of issue 1, you know, the covers come off and it's a little bit ripped. And it's like, oh, I should have kept the good one.
Mm. Would you like to hear my story about Sonic the Comic issue 1?
Mm-hmm.
I went to Sonic the Comic Con a few years ago. There was a convention for Sonic the Comic.
It
could have been some kind of heist.
Yes.
Like, you don't know that.
I don't.
A great Sonic heist. Anyway, some of the artists like Richard Elson, etc. were there. Richard Elson was at the convention that I was at. I didn't even bother saying hello.
What?
How arrogant am I? I met everyone else, but not Richard Elson, who is the main one that you'd want to
meet. Do you have an explanation? What was going through your head at the time?
I don't know.
Were you shy?
I think I just didn't want to queue. Didn't want to queue. Anyway, the story, yes. They had a huge table downstairs that was completely covered in Sonic the Comics, like all the issues all over the place. And nestled within them was issue 1. A copy of issue 1. Not the best condition copy, but a copy nonetheless. And at the end of the day, I was volunteering there technically. I was one of the organizers. I was helping, but I didn't really do much to help. At the end of the day, they sort of said on the thing, this is kind of winding down now. So, you know, if anyone wants to take in one of the issues from the table, feel free. And I actually did a sort of action roll to my feet, ran and slid down the stairs.
Yeah, did your, no your one feet was making, go round and round and make a kind yes, of tin into pot a, noise?
The super peel out, yeah. And skidded downstairs, leapt over to the table and grabbed the number 1, shoved it in my bag and just booked it. And no one was following. Like, no one was in any hurry whatsoever. And I was the only person who was just like, I'm getting that issue.
Yeah.
Like, that is happening. That is going in my collection today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you still rolled under, any time you saw something that could have emitted a red laser that you would break if you ran through.
I don't normally action roll because I just don't... I'm just a bit too... There's just a bit too much of me. Do you know what I mean? To do an action roll. The only times I've ever done an action roll other than that was when I saw a sausage dog in Oxford once, and I wanted to pet it, so I did an action roll and ran at full speed towards this sausage dog and its owner, and sort of dived on the floor in front of them.
That was the only time. Like you'd seen a grenade.
Pretty much, yeah. But I mean, it was just an exciting sort of thing.
Dog.
Yeah, just it was a sausage dog of all things. You didn't used to see them until a few years ago, and now they're everywhere. They're the new hotness.
Well, do you remember a few years ago when that guy went round stretching dogs? Ever since then.
Yeah, they must have been it. I never put two and two together. Blue Streak speeds by Sonic the Hedgehog. Too fast for the naked eye. Sonic Well, now we've got some very informative...
It's a good episode so far, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Great.
How it's going really well. I haven't done my intro to Sonic Comics, so I'll do it really quickly. I saw it in the shop and wanted it in issue 2, Robo Fox, and I got it, and then it was deemed not for me, so it was taken from me. And
what?
I never, and oh, I was not allowed to read it anymore. So I just read the odd issue that I would see at my friend's house. And then my friend became an adult and he threw away all his comics. And I said, are you throwing those comics in the bin, Matthew? And he said, yes. And I said, why didn't you put them in this bin bag that I've got? And I'll put them in the bin for you. So I loaded.
Is this true?
No, that's a lie. I just asked if I could have them. I wish it was true. I wish I was that clever to have thought of that. No, I think he just said, do you want these comics? And I was like, of course I do. He had about over 100 STCs, for God's sake.
Wee.
The whole of all of the good arcs, you know?
Yeah.
So I had them and then I sold them like a fool.
Oh.
But yeah, that's how I read them. I got them many years later. And of course, I read the illegal scans that are available online. And I don't see that there's any cause of pointing that out because there's no way to buy or see these comics unless you read these scans. What I'd like to say, though, is I wish someone out there would do some better scans because the current ones are shit. Thanks. And yes, I know you do it for free and it's completely voluntary, but you should have done a better job.
I think the job they did was okay when they did it. It's just that now it's like
fine.
20 years later and it's
fine,
not okay anymore.
Yeah, it was fine. They should just get it out in a book form. In a book form, you know. They didn't put the adverts in. That's unforgivable. How are you going to see the advert for the more zingy fruit pastels?
Yeah, it is forgivable.
See, for the Archie comics, I have this very exclusive fan site that you need to sign up an account for just to see the scans for the Archie comics. But they've got like marginally better quality scans where they also have all the ads intact. So it's great. Wow. So you'll be reading like the soap opera melodrama of whatever is going on with Knuckles' family at the time. And then you turn the page and there's an ad for Twizzlers. It's it's a pure experience.
I will be asking you about that website in due course.
Moving forward. That was I seem to remember that Archie comics happened during the era of like comic adverts where everyone was a weird photo manipulated child to have a very big face and hand holding the product they were advertising. You know those ones?
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
Angela Anaconda style is what we're talking about here.
Oh, good ref. I believe we are. Yes.
I don't really know. Is it like the sort of thing where it's like, our Tootsie Pops are so good, they're turning my head into some kind of weird helter-skelter, and then they have like a third-frame manipulated twirly head boy going, whoa. Or like, this Cap'n Crunch is so crunchy, my whole head has exploded, revealing my brain and skull.
Yeah, a lot of fisheye lens shots.
Are there any of those, adverts where it's like, tobacco is wacko if you're a teen?
There might have been some Archie specific, like Archie and Jughead comics, like one page in the back.
Oh, where it's like Jughead's about to blaze one, and Archie's like, "No, don't blaze that fat chronic Jughead." And Jughead said, "Oh, geez, I guess I'll just stick with burgers, huh, Archie?" And then everyone goes, "Yeah, yeah."
I should let you write for Riverdale.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
There's five whole panels and they're going, yeah.
And then the last panel, Veronica walks in with a baggie and she's like, I got some Eckies. And everyone's like, yes. And then the final panel is them all going mental in a field. let's talk about things that actually appeared in Archie Sonic because that's what we're here for in part. So, yes. Archie Sonic the comic. I would argue personally that this comic is sort of defined by drama both within the stories and behind the scenes.
Very,
to some extent.
Very much so. Mm. It is, you know, you read it and it's like, why are these things happening in the story? Why the sudden change of tone? Why did this character disappear out of nowhere? Why did this one disappear? All these things. And then you hear all the stories about, the writers were bickering at the time and they couldn't decide on a direction. And, the editor decided to do this insane thing. So it's kind of impossible for me especially to look at them without thinking about all the behind the scenes drama.
What do you think, sort of taking that aside as best as one can, what do you think is good about these comics? Because I think there is good there.
Yeah.
I think there is stuff I like even prior to its issue 160, Ian Flynn coming in and basically going, right,
yeah,
let's fix this as deftly as he could. I mean, what do you, I mean, what kept you reading other than, you know, slavish devotion to Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yes, well, there's definitely that. As a kid, it's probably not worth taking into account what I thought of it as a kid, because I just read and watched whatever. If it was on Nickelodeon, I'd be like, yeah, this is great. I'll watch Super Duper Sumos and But Ugly Martians. Like, yeah,
that's, those that's are high art. I'm in.
Yeah, but I think if I'm going to compare Archie Sonic to something more recent to kind of contextualize what's fun about it, I might compare it to Adventure Time, which I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
I've seen a bit of it and I thought it was very good.
Yeah,
but I'm not familiar. I know it got a bit more lore heavy and I sort of stopped watching it, not because of that, but because I forgot to carry on.
Yeah,
but no, I can see where you're coming from to an extent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just this something about having this fantasy world where they can kind of throw in whatever they want and it'll work. Like, they can do medieval fantasy, they can do sci-fi, they can say it's post-apocalyptic Earth, they can go off and they can do a loose adaptation of Journey to the West. Why not? And it just all kind of fits into the world somehow. But also having this focus on character development and kind of this the personal lives of the main teen characters and things like that.
Yeah.
Although I would definitely say Adventure Time's execution is much better on average than the older Archie Sonic comics. Although, you know, I'll say I do like the series. It's very easy to rag on it.
Mm.
And I, as we talk about it more, I'll probably bring up several more insane things that make people wonder why I like it at all. But yeah. It's a fun series.
From my perspective, I find even when it's at its weakest, there's something there to enjoy, or even just an issue away. Like, some of the worst ones that I read were illustrated by Jonathan Gray, and like every single panel was just beautiful, like cartoony, insanely hyper detailed in places, but always popped, you know. I feel like I should talk about my first issue of the Archie comic.
Mm.
I can't remember where I got them from, but I got a small stack of issues. And the first one I picked up was I don't know if it was called this, but it was like the girls special or something.
Yeah, the girls rule special.
Yes, but the thing is, and now I'm not going to get into a quagmire here, the first thing that happens in that comic is Sally Acorn is completely nude.
Oh,
yeah.
And submerging herself in, I mean, you know, featureless, but not that featureless, depending on the artist. But basically, the first thing you see is Sally's sort of bottom as she goes into this, submerges herself in this pool. And you
can't. See, that's the stuff that, from the perspective of someone who grew up on STC.
Yeah,
is weird about Archie is how some of the artists render the body of Sally Acorn sometimes.
Oh, I won't deny that.
I'm not going to immediately lean into any kind of deviance here.
But once.
Thank you for that, Dave. why don't you reminisce about Trumpton? Yeah. Shut up. He's throwing me off now. Yes,
completely got my number.
That
there.
Was an extremely jarring issue to read. Now, because it's very odd that an officially licensed Sonic comic would present such an image to me, and then the story meant nothing to me because obviously I had no context for it. I don't even think it made much sense even with context. But
it's terrible if you know the context.
Okay, but then it was followed by, I believe, stories about Lupe, and some other female characters, and it was dreadful. But it was fine. And, you know, a part of me saw that first page and went, okay, well, I guess this is what they're doing. I guess this is what's happening now. Because that must have been the jumping off point for a lot of people in terms of but let's not dig into that too deeply. I only started reading again after like 160 when people sort of nudged me and went, "Hey, Stu, the guy's gone. The comic is good again now." And for the record, having recently revisited that first reboot, it's not a reboot, but you get me. That first Changing of the Guard when Ian Flynn came in. Issue 160, It doesn't immediately get good because there's still about 30 issues or so of tying off crap.
30?
It's a lot. It might not be 30, that might be unfair, but it felt like a lot of issues where it was just, okay, let's deal with this. Like, let's get this garbage that was set up completely excised, like, as efficiently as possible. Mm-hmm. On some pages, there would be up to 6 asterisks worth of boxing refer to this issue, refer to this issue, refer to this issue. But once that stuff was essentially done, he was able to make a really rather good comic. Mm-hmm. But that's getting a bit ahead because that's not even talking about people like Patrick Spaziante. Is that how you pronounce it? And, you know, even the early Ken Penda stuff I didn't think was terrible. Mm-hmm. But did it all kind of really kick off with the Metal Madness special? I want to say issue 50?
Yeah, Mecha Madness was, I think it was issue 39, and then it was a special issue after that. Right. That's definitely the story everyone remembers best, and I think, honestly... Mm. I feel like a lot of people just picked up Mecha Madness and that is like their main memory of what Archie Sonic was in the early days. And it's not representative, but it is a fun story.
You know, that's funny because when I first got online and started being an online Sonic person, which I find myself being again, and I've had like 20 years where I wasn't. So I was just like at either end of my internet time. That had happened quite recently. So all the talk about Archie was like how great it was, and those were the shots that you saw, and you're like, "Oh yeah, wait, that does look good." Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
was that drawn by Patrick?
Yeah, that was Patrick Spaziante, who was mostly known as the main cover artist for a very long time, and there were a lot of issues, many issues where the cover art was way cooler than what was inside. But I think people like Mecha Madness because that's one of the issues where you can't say that because it's just fun action and these giant splash panels of the roboticized Sonic fighting various characters. And it's like, yeah, it's just a fun time. It doesn't have the soap opera love triangles and everything that so many other issues back then got bogged down with.
Yeah. It wasn't the first one that was more serious following the gag strips, but it was... I mean, did it sort of create the direction for the series kind of going forward? I don't know. I mean, I remember issue 50 being quite significant in that respect, but I don't remember exactly when it started to get more soap opera-ish and more continuity focused.
Yeah.
After a lot of not whole gag episodes, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of went back and forth between the old style gag comics from the earlier writers like Michael Gallagher, and then the more serialized either action adventure or like soap opera. That's not necessarily to disparage it, but it is a soap opera very much. And Penders was basically the one who steered that direction. I believe he literally just was like looking at the letters from fans and watching some of Sat AM and seeing, oh, this is what the kids are responding better to as opposed to the gag comics. So it's like, okay, we'll like start to incorporate more of the backstory and we'll get more into, you know, Sally as a character and things like that. And fans seem to like a lot of it. So they just kind of steered more towards that over time.
For me, it's like a, I'm no expert, obviously. I have only read through it the once, and even then I was skimming quite a lot of it, I have to be honest.
I don't blame you.
It was a gradual, like, more and more sort of weight added to the stories, and then eventually, obviously, it had to kind of break. Mm-hmm. Because so many characters, like, so many characters. And the most baffling thing of all for me is the... I mean, I kind of like it in a sick way, but it's the reuse of really obviously one-off gag characters from the old gag strips that suddenly come back and they just don't fit anymore. What are they, vertical and horizontal or something?
Oh my God.
They're like a Beano story. They're just, what was that again? Please remind me, because that's sticking in my head as just being insane.
Yeah, so like issue two, I think, they were already running out of ideas for what to do with Sonic, I think. So it's like, all right, here's some new characters. Kids, write in if you want to see more of Vertical and Horizontal, or these two little bald cartoon comic strip guys who just kind of, it's supposed to be like wacky cartoon logic stuff. Mm. And they're like tricksters, and they're kind of messing with Sonic, and they live in this dimension where it's all colorful and things keep shifting around. But it's really just like, they stand on the sides of panels or on the top of a panel, and then the gravity changes and Sonic falls and he's like, whoa.
That's a fun gag idea. You know?
Yeah. It's like, they could have had a little fun with it, but they disappeared. And like, then
they came back, didn't they? They brought them back for one of the much later issues for some reason.
Yeah. So I swear them coming back was also a joke.
Right.
Because it was like around issue 60 after things had very firmly gotten more serious.
Yeah.
And the original writer is back with a new story about Vertical and Horizontal. And now they're evil killer robots who just, they aren't friends anymore. They want to kill each other. And they're like cruel demigods. And I swear it was just a joke about the state of the comic industry at the time.
Well, that makes it funny then. Yeah. I'm glad that they did that. But I should reread this. I really feel like I should reread Archie all improperly for my sins.
It's like, on one level, I want to think it's funny as a jab at the dark age of comics, but it's also like, why is this happening now? Why are we devoting an issue to this? Which is lot of things in that period.
What stands out to you as the sort of the better stories of this period, or was handled best, do you think? I mean, do you think there was anything that wasn't mishandled ultimately in some way?
I mean,
I am being positive because I do like these comics. It's just, it's very difficult not to criticize them.
No, I mean, if anyone's read my blog, I have torn many of these to pieces. Not literally. I would never.
I think that they're even handed. Like, you're not afraid. You know, you'll praise them when they're good. But you know, it's not just a mean sort of thing.
I think early on, it's kind of difficult. I think Mecha Madness definitely stands out as just a fun action adventure story, and it's like kind of a little bit of interesting character work in there, maybe. So that's like pretty good. Some of the early stuff from Penders was, before he really got bogged down in his own continuity, was pretty decent, whereas it's like, here's like a little bit of character development for this character. There was a story early on with Sally that was striking to me, where after so many pun-driven comics, it was just like, here's Sally like on a mission, like snooping around, and there's like a bomb about to go off, and there was no dialogue, and it was just all conveyed through the action. And I'm like, wow, this is like slightly more mature and like interesting. Occasionally there would be like a game adaptation that they'd throw in, which was always an odd fit because it was such a different world, but it would be like, this is fine. This is like, they're just having a little fun with it. But it's a little difficult for me to find stuff in the early issues that's like, oh, this is what's great, because so much of it is just like, it's okay comic for kids. It's not like blowing me away, but it's like, this is fine. This isn't the worst thing I've ever read.
Oh, I quite like the early issues particularly because it is just a silly comic, and I like the drawings, and I think it's just it's sort of honest about what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, here's some cartoon characters. There you are.
They're doing stuff. It's a lot more comforting for the British to have an anthology comic, I feel, because that's what we're used to. You know?
Right.
I want to briefly discuss what did sink the comic in the end. Mm-hmm. Because there's something I don't feel like I can be part of a Archie discussion without bringing it up. And I'm going to say at this point that I'm officially issuing a content warning because this is not good.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry. I just can't not bring it up because it to me, it exemplifies everything that went wrong. There's an issue where there's a sequence where the side character, this Freedom Fighter Bunny Rabot, one of my favorite characters, by the way,
mm-hmm. No,
is, I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see me, hanging out with Evil Sonic or Anti-Sonic, who is, I don't know if it was actually Evil Sonic or if it was a different kind of character, but anyway, it's an evil version of Sonic who looks exactly like Sonic, who is messing with his friends, basically. Now, they're lying down together under a tree in the night, and there's some dialogue that's been very clearly rewritten because there are wrong fonts in it. There's some stuff that is the original font, and there is some stuff that is in the, we have replaced this, you know, the benevolent General Krull kind of thing, like The Simpsons, you know. But it's like, oh, our little nap went on for longer than I thought, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like really, really obviously coded as they just had sex.
Yep.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Just
yeah. No, evil Sonic.
And yeah, Bunny okay, Robot. Still though.
No, hang on. That's what makes it worse though.
Okay.
Because yeah. Evil Sonic.
Oh no.
In the guise of Sonic, who Bunny Rabbit thought was Sonic, sort of canonically did. That's the crime that that's the crime of rape by deception. You know, it's not a great thing to put in a kid's comic or anything at all. And to me, that sort of characterizes a lot of the struggle. Like the fact that Penders thought that was even one atom of that was appropriate for the comic, to the point that it got to lettering.
I was going to say, we don't know. Do we know what it said before?
I don't know what it said before. But I think that he has officially come out and said, yes, that was my intention. That was
his intention.
He didn't say in so many words, but it was like people asked him about it. And he made some comment about like, oh, Bunny betraying her boyfriend's trust or whatever there. It's like, okay, that's one read on that situation.
But. Oh, I'm not saying that was a common occurrence in Archie, but I think it sums up the distance between editorial and creative to some extent, that it could get that far and even with the edits that even made print is astonishing to me. Now I want to say that was quite close to 160 when they just went, right, no, we're doing this over, because there was quite a lot of romantic drama.
Oh boy!
In that comic, especially towards that point, there's that very famous, very memeable panel of Tails screaming "I hate you" at Sonic and then running off crying, because Sonic is in a relationship with Fiona Fox, which is another character from the very early gag strips, who is now back as this sort of variously femme fatale-ish kind of character. I think. I'm not sure if I'm correct on that one.
I mean, they brought her back, and she was this kind of another girl for a while,
right?
And then she got paired off with Sonic for a little while to extend even more of the soap opera web of relationships there. And then she kind of got reinvented as a villain by Ian Flynn, kind of digging back into some of her previous appearances.
Ian Flynn had Sally punch her in the solar plexus, though, which made me really laugh when it happened. She's just talking about, I think she's talking about, I don't remember what she's talking about, but Sally, there's just this great panel sequence of Sally just walking over to her and just like biffing her.
I don't quite unexpected. Remember the context.
It's very unexpected, but it's also very funny. Now, speaking of all these characters, do we have any particular favorite characters who are exclusive to this comic who we'd like to see either return or at least see a statue in their honor erected somewhere? You know,
well, she's not exclusive to the comics, but she's basically known for it now. I definitely like Bunny Rabbit a lot. I mean, she's the avatar on my blog, so anyone who reads it knows that. But I think for a long time, she was kind of refreshing compared to how much the other girls got bogged down with the romantic drama and the love triangles, where she was just kind of this positive character who was good at fighting and pretty straightforward and just like a fun addition to the team. But there was also this story that really stood out to me early on where she has a nightmare about her roboticized parts taking over the rest of her body. Mm. It was just this really interesting look into, oh, she's like so positive and like eager to fight and help and use her roboticized parts to help her friends all the time. But deep down, she's like terrified that the thing that gives her her fighting abilities is making her a liability to her friends. Mm. And I thought that was interesting. Of course, then the thing about the early comics is that there will be a one-off backup story like that. That's like, oh, that's like some interesting character work. And then it never gets brought up again for over 100 issues until Ian Flint comes along and is like, hey, I remember that.
Yeah. Attached to Bunny Rabbit to some extent, I was very impressed with what happened with Antoine. Mm-hmm. Now, what's his full name again? Antoine DeCoulette. Yeah, DeCoulette, that's it. Because originally in Sat-AM and in the original comics, he's mm-hmm. just this milquetoast sort of loser, kind of whiny, mm-hmm. like awful character. But then as the comic went on, especially with Ian Flynn, he sort of made him kind of a badass in a way. Like he was not afraid to stand up and fight for, you know, who he loves. And I remember, like, holy crap, they made Antoine awesome. Like, this is great. How could they do this? And the best part is, his name is already cool as hell. So he didn't have to do anything, really, just slightly change it. It's like that bit in Superman where Christopher Reeve stands up, takes his glasses off, and suddenly he's Superman. It's like that, except Antoine.
Yeah.
The cool yeah. It's the humorous Franche, you know, that sort of thing.
Rob Paulsen doing a bad French accent in the cartoon.
Oh, that was Rob Paulsen. It's always Rob Paulsen.
But apparently with Antoine, the thing is that for years they would get letters from kids asking to kill Antoine off because they didn't like him. So all the writers took it on themselves, like, okay, we gotta fix this character. Mm. We gotta make him like the underdog, like he's cowardly, but he overcomes it to help his friends, that kind of character, instead of just a bunch of French jokes.
Yeah, I just think he ended up being one of the more interesting characters in the series. I was really impressed with his evolution, honestly.
Yeah.
Anytime Antoine was serious, I was just like, now we're talking. Right, so the basically, eventually, I'm realizing we're spending a lot of time. I have three things to cover, so I'm afraid I'm going to slightly speed through this part. Mr. Ken Penders, upon having been booted off and or left the comic, he got a bee in his bonnet about believing that he owned most of the cast, I believe, or at least enough of the significant cast were attached to those characters in some way or connected to them.
Yes.
But he wanted to own, I believe Knuckles and his entire extended family, basically, or at least the extended Knuckles cast, Locke and et cetera, and Julie Sue and all of the echidnas.
Well, thankfully he's never tried to claim ownership of Knuckles himself, no. Although he does think Sega should license Knuckles back to him to keep using him. So
it's only reasonable. But basically, as a result, there was a lawsuit from him. I'm not actually sure on the exact details of the lawsuit, but there was a lawsuit. And the long and short of it, to my understanding, is that Archie couldn't produce the contract. So they couldn't disprove what he was saying or something. I'm not sure how it worked because he won the lawsuit.
Right.
Imagine having lawyers so shit that they lose that lawsuit.
Yeah, they had to fire their entire legal team in the middle of it because it was going so badly.
Astonishing. I don't understand how you can, like, all you would need to do is walk up to the front with a copy of Sonic 3 and Knuckles or something and just go, look at this.
Yeah.
He didn't invent them. It's this. Look at it. Play it sometime. It's really good. You should give it a go. Anyway, and the long and short of it is a character named Thrash shoved all the cast into a big ring. Was he called Thrash? I think he was called Thrash.
I haven't gotten there yet on my blog, but I think it's Thrash. Right. Well, I know what happened.
I spoiled it.
You're not spoiling. It's fine.
Okay.
I think it's Thrash the... I think he's like a Tasmanian devil.
Yeah, yeah. It's very jarring because it almost literally between two issues, there are suddenly no more of those characters. They're just gone. They've been...
Yeah.
Bodily shoved into a warp ring to nowhere, to copyright limbo land.
Yes. There was basically a period where they were still in the middle of the lawsuits, but for a long time they'd been telling the creative team, oh, it's fine, we'll work it out. And then it just hits the point where they're like, oh God, we're not going to work it out. You guys got to get rid of these characters fast. So in a couple issues, it would be like, they suddenly introduced these new characters who were suspiciously similar to these other characters.
when they first brought in what's obviously going to be the next set of Power Rangers.
Yeah. But with the whole massive echidna cast that had been introduced for the Knuckles stories, literally an arc was rewritten so that they were shoved into a warp ring into nowhere. Yeah, like you said. So they were just erased from existence, effectively, all of Knuckles' family.
To Ian Flynn's credit, he sells the emotion of that. Mm-hmm. He does make that work, I think, when you get to it. Because I remember thinking it was a particularly well-done story, considering that there is a lot of emotion there. I mean, people must have really liked some of those characters. I mean, at least one person must have liked one of them.
Well, there were like a couple that people liked, especially throughout Ian Flynn's run, as they were written better.
And they were rehabilitated to some extent. Yeah. Well, I mean, I liked Dr. Finitivus because when I saw Tracy Yardley at one of the Summer of Sonics, I demanded he draw Dr. Finitivus for me, and he did. Tracy Yardley, lovely chap, by the way. Lovely chap. I should really declare my bias at this point. He has done a few of guest strips for my webcomic. He has liked some of my swearing jokes on Twitter. So, good luck. Good, great bunch of lads, Tracy Yardley. shortly after that, there was a more sort of direct reboot took place. But it wasn't immediately, because I think there was the whole Genesis Mega Drive story or something that set it up. I don't remember exactly how this went down.
They kind of tied it into that, but that was just kind of I think that was the time with Sonic Generations, where it's like, oh,
right,
here is like an alternate timeline where it's a retelling of Sonic 1, but like the Freedom Fighters are there.
And multiple shockingly long Mega Man crossovers, I believe.
Yes, they were very lucky, because the news that they would have to reboot came during the first Mega Man crossover.
Yeah.
So, which had none of the comic exclusive characters in it to begin with. So they had like, it bought them time to figure out what the hell they were going to do when they came back from the crossover.
I mean, the reboot issues, they're the ones that I had trades of. And I liked them. I mean, I did miss the some of the characters. I did miss the richness of the world they'd created. But I thought Ian did about as good a job as you could do of being told, right, all your plans have to go down the toilet now.
Yeah.
Make up some BS, please. Yeah. And he made up some rather good BS, I have to say. I really did enjoy it. And I believe they were right smack in the middle of a Sonic the Fighters adaptation when the axe came down. I might be wrong. It might be slightly after that, actually.
It was a little after. I think but they did do a Sonic the Fighters adaptation in the middle, and that was a very well.
They introduced Honey the Cat, who's a lovely character. They also were bringing in characters like Scratch and Grounder and Breezy from Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, because they were still illegally allowed to use them, which is really odd. Really odd to see them around, see them mingling. I love Scratch and Grounder, but you've got to have Long John Baldry Robotnik there for them to be especially funny. So he can say one of his classic Pingus lines, you know? So that was the rather unceremonious death of Archie Sonic at issue 290. It stopped coming out for several months, but they didn't officially cancel it until in 2017. One day they just went, Yeah, it's cancelled.
Yeah,
that was it. One of the, well, the longest running franchise comic ever just died because a stupid man had an idiotic idea about a lawsuit. And by the way, if he's thinking of listening to this and then suing me for calling him a stupid man, please don't. I have nothing. I can't. I'll lose, and I'll lose all of the nothing that I have, and then I'll be. Anyway, I'm going to pretend I was talking. I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Dave Ballmer.
Yes, that's fine.
Yeah, Dave, you ruined Archie Sonic.
I know I did. We already have an agreement between me and Stuart that I'm allowed to take any of his things that I want. So like, it makes no difference.
I don't remember that agreement, but
I wrote it down somewhere. It'll be right
See.
I remember the anguish of those last days, you know, because I wasn't an Archie reader, but Abby worked at a comic shop at the time. So she got to hear from a lot of readers of that comic. And and they were this particular shop had a good sort of kids section, so there was a lot of Sonic there, and just the people would be like, "But it was in previews. Like, we know there's another issue, but why aren't we hearing about it?" And then it was like, "Why isn't it in previews anymore?" And to me, the real tragedy of it was that we got all but one issue of the Mega Drive miniseries.
Yes, the second one, right?
The brilliant, and it was Tyson, right? Drew that?
Yeah, it was Tyson Hess.
Yeah, it was the second one, wasn't it? Mega Drive Next Level or something.
And it looked so good, and it was a comic that was sort of like, how about we do a classic Sonic miniseries, as if they just kept making Sonic games. Here's the story of another one, and it's about magic cogs instead of Chaos Emeralds or whatever.
And this is pre-Sonic Mania as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the thing, and it really, really, like, everything that Tyson did about Sonic Mania really slotted into to what he'd been doing on this comic. As I understand it, it's drawn. He just legally is never allowed to show anyone.
Yep. I mean, there's a few issues from the tail end where, like, the inked line art got released, and fans would go back and they'd color it, and they'd try to piece together from the art and the solicits like what the story would be, and like reinsert dialogue back into it, but they never were able to release it.
God, I love Sonic fans, and that's not ironic. I actually do love Sonic fans. They get so much shit that they don't deserve.
Yeah, no,
some of them deserve it.
Good stuff.
A handful of them deserve it, but by and large,
in any group as large as the online Sonic fandom, you're going to get a number, and it's going to be quite a high number of really silly people.
The stuff they
make that's good is so good.
I like a lot of things that are things that the internet likes. I'm a fan of many things, and I've never known a community like make so much stuff. Just like the insane amount of produced art, hacks, writing.
Yeah.
Everything, huge fan sites, blogs, all sorts, online continuations of obscure British comics, all that sort of thing. he says.
Eliminate clutter and embrace the freedom of HyperX wireless gaming gear for PC and console. Power through all the great monthly PlayStation Plus games with the Cloud Stinger Core Wireless for PlayStation. Enjoy lightweight comfort with reliable wireless freedom, so you won't miss plot points when you head to the fridge. High-quality HyperX wireless products can be found at most fine retailers, as well as online at Target, Micro Center, Best Buy, Amazon, Walmart, or shop directly at HyperX.com and HP.com.
Superhero stuff you should know. Go deeper than you've gone before into your favorite comic book films, storylines, and characters.
Superhero stuff you should know.
I'm part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
Us, We're the Spirit Hunters, and we're a show that treats Hunter x Hunter and Yu Hakusho's author as the center of the universe. Some weeks we do linguistic analysis. The Chinese meaning of this character is to smelt or refine, but so the changed meaning in Japanese it means to temper. Other times, we get absolutely smashed.
So we take one shot every time. Yusuke uses the ray gun.
1 hour later.
This is the least coherent episode.
Sarah, I think your pirate is haunting.
Check us out at the HyperX Podcast Network.
Eliminate clutter and embrace the freedom of HyperX wireless gaming gear for PC and console. Power through all the great monthly PlayStation Plus games with the Cloud Stinger Core Wireless for PlayStation. Enjoy lightweight comfort with reliable wireless freedom, so you won't miss plot points when you head to the fridge. High-quality HyperX wireless products can be found at most fine retailers, as well as online at Target, Best Buy, and Amazon. Or you can shop for them directly at HyperX.com and HP.com.
Speaking of obscure British comics, I think we should talk about STC now, Sonic the Comic. Mm-hmm. Dave, should we declare our biases at this point?
I mean, right? Yes.
Well, as you may have established, I'm English.
Yes.
And I liked the English Sonic comic as a result.
Yes.
I stand by my love for that comic, and we will get into why. Now, my notes for this part are complete arse. They're just nothing. Sure. I ran out of time.
No, that's
I was too busy eating an entire pizza. But I think that there's enough knowledge here.
And your fingers are all greasy and you can't really...
Yeah, I was trying to type and it was just like, yeah. Oh, my keyboard's... Oh, this is disgusting.
Yeah,
I'd wash my hands, but I'm just so busy.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. Sonic the Comic, British Sonic comic from Fleetway, got started in 1993 in May, as you have so gamely informed us. Now, let's try and keep this reasonable length.
Yes.
It's going to be very difficult. Now, as a British comic from Fleetway, Egmont, whatever you want to call them, it took on the typical British comic anthology approach. We do not do comics with 18 pages of story or 16-page stories. We don't do that. Mm-hmm. We do comics with a 7-page story and up to 3 5-page stories with bits of news and trivia and things around them. That's how Sonic the Comic was. But generally, it would be more along the lines of a series of 1-page strips, occasionally a 2-page strip, some strips that are just half a page, and a huge number of characters,
well,
of different characters.
This is the thing, and this is why there's such a difference between the character of the American comic, or yes, the Archie comic, and ours, is that I think it both of them... See, it does, we talked a lot about how, like, the Archie Sonic is sort of a soap opera, and, like, it's about teen love triangles. But, like, of course it is. It's published by Archie, a company whose whole thing is doing that.
Well, I take issue with that.
Yeah?
Minor issue with that, because I think that Archie comics, as in the, you know, Archie Super Digest sort of thing, are the closest thing on American shelves to things like the Beano and the Dandy, in terms of the way that they're structured. Because you will get, like, 1-page strips, then you've got, like, a 3-page strip, then you've got, like, 10-page strips. Mm. It is a lot more like that. I quite like the Archie comics. Should I explain why, or is that an unnecessary deviation? I'm going to explain why. I think it's fascinating that comics, ostensibly aimed at young children, feature so many drawings of women in swimwear. Drawn by known erotic artists at times as well. Yeah. Like Dan DiCarlo used to draw. Yeah. He's like one of the main Archie artists, and he used to draw tunes for like Playboy and stuff. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's odd.
No, it connects up with, like, the same year that Sonic the Comic started, that was the year Channel 4 happened to show Saved by the Bell, more or less in its entirety, which is a similar thing. It's like a show for kids that, like, way too often focuses on the girls being in swimwear.
Right. I've never seen Saved by the Bell because I was like, oh, this isn't cartoons. I turned it off.
Because that's the thing. It kind of is, but just with real people.
I mean, I watched the opening, because the opening was cartoons. But then the song was nice. Then it was just like straight off.
Yeah.
Not for me.
But anyway, so Archie made comics that concerned themselves with, like, sort of a silly version of, and a kid's chased version of, like, which of these will kiss one another or whatever.
They did do, like,
did that.
They did do series like Life with Archie, which is like two different parallel timelines, one of which where Archie has married Veronica, one where he's married Betty.
Right. So what you've got there is a sci-fi concept used only to illustrate what if they kissed a different person.
Archie gets shot and dies at the end of it. He gets shot and dies, and it's not a fake out. He fucking dies. Well,
depending on which woman he married in the end.
I forgot you can't say swears on this, but I think it's worth it for Archie Andrews being shot to death.
My point is,
I'm going to allow myself one of those every show. It's like my PG-13.
But my point was that when we the English, because you wouldn't know this to listen to me, but I am also an English man. Yes.
What?
Yeah, it's true. And when we made a Sonic comic, we just continued making the kind of comic we were used to making. But yes, those are the two things that Stuart has just described, the sort of the like one page per character gag comics. And then that was one kind of comic. That was your main 10p, 20p. Every child reads these, picks
Buster,
them up when your mum goes
Whoopi,
to
core,
the supermarket. Yeah.
School fun. These are all real.
Oh, yeah.
Nutty, then, Toot, Hoot. Hoot's one. Hoot's a real one.
Yeah. These are the names of the real ones.
Yeah.
But then you also had things like 2000 AD, which was what STC kind of followed more along the lines of, even though that was for much older kids, where it is, here's five pages of this, you know, fascist regime situation.
Judge Dredd, basically, was from 2000 AD. I'm sure everyone knows that, but bring it out there anyway. Still going to this day, 2000 AD, still running, going strong. I had a subscription a couple of years ago, and I couldn't keep up with it, so I just had like 100,000 issues of 2000 AD that I just didn't look at. I'm not saying it was bad, but I just didn't get time to read it.
No, that's the
thing. Is there anything you'd like to plug from Rebellion while we're here, Dave? From Rebellion Publishing that you may
Is that allowed?
I don't know. I mean, you probably should.
So I'll tell you why it's allowed in this. It's because my wife happens to be one of the artists for the current Sonic comics over at IDW. And between us, we have now infiltrated the very British gag strip world that we're talking about, and we're working on something called Monster Fun, which I happen to
he's actually holding it
right
up
here.
He's actually holding it up. You shill. Disgusting shill. Who prompted this?
You did a minute ago. You heard yourself. It was on the record. And we make these.
Boy, is my face red.
We make silly strip comics of this exact sort together. But that's not really what STC was. It was it had that livelihood to it. It had that kind of, because all the characters in those are some version of naughty boy or naughty girl does misbehaving in some way in things like the Beano.
Throws things at the dad usually.
Yeah. And so that's
splats their father.
Yeah. So that's why you have this, when Sonic has an attitude, it's that he is, you know, he's got a, it means a different thing than when Sonic has an attitude in America, I think, because it comes from that Dennis the Menace sensibility. Of course, America has their own Dennis the Menace, but that's not the one I was referring to a second ago. And
I was so confused when I found that out.
Yeah.
Because over here,
Everybody was. I think the people who made the comics were, because they didn't know they were each doing it.
Well, they aired Dennis the Menace, the cartoon, the American Dennis the Menace, but they just called it Dennis.
Mm.
So when I found out he was actually Dennis the Menace, I was like, but if he's Dennis the Menace, then who's? Like full on, like just destroyed my microphone. Carry on.
That's what he did.
I've actually pulled my headphones out. So,
oh dear.
I was so amused by Dennis that I destroyed the podcast as a joke. we haven't even started talking about STC yet. This is what we warned.
It's not going very well, is it? No.
Me and Dave,
I was warned
not do this.
Sorry about this.
So we're going, shut up, Dave, for God's sake. You're ruining the podcast again. It's only you doing it and no one else, and definitely not me.
No.
I'm doing the podcast right. anyway, Sonic the Comics. So what you had, essentially, this did chop and change a little bit as time went on, but mostly it was you would open with a 7-page Sonic story.
Yeah.
Initially, relatively self-contained. We'll get to that. You'd have some news. You'd have some reviews of new Mega Drive or Master System games. Not exactly extremely good reviews, I must state, but they were there nonetheless. You'd have the thing called Q-Zone, which was cheats.
Yeah.
Like, or here's how to beat Sonic 2, or more memorably, here's how to do a football game with loads of nonsensical advice from Football Man.
From someone who was talking more about football than he was the Mega Drive game he was supposed to be.
Something. David Gibbon? I want to say David Gibbon.
He's one of the people. I couldn't tell you which one it was. That.
Anyway, yes. So other than these features and letters called, as they're called, speed lines at the back of the comic, you'd have your 7-page Sonic story. You'd have a 5-page Golden Axe story, a 5-page Wonder Boy story, and I want to say a 5-page Shinobi story back at the beginning.
At the beginning, yeah.
Now, people don't usually talk about the backup stories because they were very varying in quality, I would argue.
Yes.
The Shinobi ones were pretty good, I thought.
Yes, oh yeah.
But Golden Axe and Wonder Boy didn't leave much of an impression on me. But the thing is, if you didn't like a backup story, they were only around for, what, four or five weeks at a time?
Yeah, and then it would move on.
Then they would move on and swap them out.
In would come Echo the Dolphin, in would come Streets of Rage.
And the way it sort of worked out, it would be generally that every so often there would be an all change. So you could jump in, you know, at least every 5 weeks, you are more or less guaranteed a jumping on point. I say more or less because there were some longer form stories later down the line. But the Sonic stories, they started off very, very basic, like as in Sonic jumping and going, yo, I'm the cool hero. I'm going to get some rings. Oh, there's a Badnik. I'm going to smash it open and get and rescue the animals inside. And Robotnik would go,
boy, have I worked up an appetite. Time for 40 burgers.
Yeah, they hadn't established the chili dogs at that point, so it would just be like one of the Sonic yearbooks. He's just lying there eating what appear to be Maltesers, which really odd.
It was a really weird book.
He was just lying there up against a palm tree eating Maltesers with cans of Coke all around him, and I was just like, it must be the metabolism for a fast hedgehog, you know, because I don't think that sets a very good example for the kids, does it?
No, but that exactly. Sonic was who we wanted to be. He was the dream. If you were Sonic, you'd get to lie around and eat sweeties and burgers and Coke, and you'd be a hero and everyone thinks.
My mum never let me run around big loops ever. No, she wouldn't let me do it.
No, mine didn't. And I begged and I begged and I begged.
I didn't go anywhere. Anyway, so you would get characters such as Sparkster from Rocket Knight, you'd get Marco's Magic Football, you'd get Shining Force of all things, for God's sake. Very inaccurate adaptation of Shining Force.
Yeah, an entire JRPG, they had to adapt it in six episodes of 5 pages each.
Very memorable, though. Memorable.
I bet that went great.
Yeah, memorable, I would say, because of the really, really cool bit where they suddenly reveal the nuclear bomb.
Yeah. That's memorable now. I didn't remember it until I did a podcast about it. Now I'll remember it. Maybe we'll see.
But eventually, the stories based on other games other than Sonic disappeared, with one notable exception, which we will get to, because we're more talking about Sonic here. And they were replaced with backup stories about more Sonic characters.
About Sonic.
So you get a Tails solo story, or Knuckles solo story, or Chaotix Crew solo story, or that's pretty much it, actually. Oh, Amy and her girlfriend Techno.
Yeah, of course, very important.
That's canon now, because the original writer, Nigel Kitching, made them a couple in the story that he did. So it's official, and all the people who keep putting angry reactions on the things that we write on STCO about it.
Do they?
Sod off.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do.
I thought the world was fully in favor of Amy and Techno as a couple because it's so obvious.
No, the world is a terrible place to tell them, sorry. But no, they would do those adventures where Amy and Techno would get magically warped to a different world every week so that the comics legend Lou Stringer could create for 5 pages a world of puns of his very own making.
Oh, I can't wait to get to that bit in the podcast.
Oh, I want to meet Lou Stringer. I want to meet Lou Stringer. I apologize for harassing him so much.
I have done that. He's a good guy.
What? When did you meet Lou Stringer?
I've met Lou a few times.
I hate you so much it hurts.
Am I lying? I think I have. I think
are
I
you
met him
lying?
A few times.
Well, think about it. Did you meet a bald bloke who said, I done Tom Thug?
No, it was definitely Lou Stringer, and I've met him at
conventions. Okay,
conventions.
That's
come to Thorbald.
That story checks out. He does go to those. Lou Stringer, for those not versed, he is a British comics royalty.
Yeah,
and he contributed the backup stories. Yes, he contributed backup stories to Sonic the Comic about all manner of characters, but he mostly did Amy and Tech. Now, I think that's fair to say. He did lots of Sonic backups and Tails backups as well.
It's what he's thought of as having done the most latterly. I haven't run the numbers. And of course, I'm 4 years now I'm entering the fourth year of a podcast about it. And there hasn't been a single Amy and Techno from him. We've had loads and loads. Blimey. So he's a prolific creator of different things.
Yeah,
For the comic,
he was doing the lead strips at some points as well. He had a lot in there, but the backup strips were not always, but usually gag based, or at least the Sonic ones were. There were exceptions because what they did with Tails, which was make him a hero of the Nameless Zone, which was like a fantasy dragons and dungeons and elves and
boglins. Ultimately, that didn't really last for very long, but it leaves a strong impression because it's what they did with him first.
Yes, and it was a lot of fun, but it didn't really feed back into the main stories in any way. No. It would just be he would go there, he would put some armor on, and he would hit some goblins with the sword.
Yeah.
And then he would leave, and no one would ever talk about it.
Yeah, pretty much the joke was initially that, like, Tails had this secret double life that he came from. It was one of these things where it was like, oh, I don't mention my family or whatever, except in Tails' case, his family lived in a fantasy dimension, and he'd convinced them that he was a hero over on Moby. It was that thing. It was that, my parents think I'm the manager, let's all pretend, or whatever. It was like that. But he'd pretended he was the hero of Mobius, so now he got in all these scrapes where he had to save things. And then that didn't really go anywhere, and they stopped doing it.
Well, they had Knuckles go as well, didn't they?
That was great when that... Because he was just ripping the piss.
Well, that was when they were getting Nigel Kitching to draw it as well, and Nigel Kitching drawing is always a treat.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that again shortly as well. See, we're going into so much unnecessary detail here.
This is a bit too granular. There's something I want to say to introduce the concept of STC to people listening, because there are misconceptions about what Sonic the Comic is and what the context of it is.
Oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started.
Well, and the reason is that, like, the early days of Sonic fandom on the internet consisted of a load of kids who were just old enough to get all bolshy. You know, we were 14, 15, 16, 17 at the high end. And we were still in the 90s console war. Basically. And not just Sonic fandom. Like,
I'm still in it now.
Well, yeah. But the establishment of, like, what people now think is the history of video games and still pass it around and still do YouTube videos about it was propaganda written by children who were marks for these corporations that were
100%
making these, like, fake rivalries for the playground. And so... This is why, you know, people think that, like, Sega didn't do very well in the console war, for instance. Yes, they did. It's just that there was more Nintendo fans on the early internet than Sega fans.
I've been told, like, now, I'm not going to rag on Americans like I usually do. the history of retro gaming, as presented online in particular, is extraordinarily US-centric, as it would be when it's being made by people who live in America. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. However, there was no video game crash.
No.
In England, we kept making games and nobody talks about them.
No. Or indeed, sort of more or less anywhere, except that was a local issue. But yes, so, and in the same vein, the character that the world thinks that Sonic the Comic has was written by propagandists during what was genuinely a sort of light rivalry going on the internet between American Sonic fans and British Sonic fans that was happening at the time. And the thing is, the key difference between American Sonic fans and British Sonic fans in the 90s when all this lore was being written is that we had to pay per minute and our dads didn't let us on for more than about 10 minutes a day. And meanwhile, the Americans were out there writing FAQs and doing all this stuff and getting all of the history foundation written down. Mm-hmm. So I think Sonic the Comic is, first of all, it's thought of as Fleetway, and it's thought of as this odd thing where, like, oh, I don't know, a couple of guys somewhere that doesn't matter made a weird Sonic comic. Here's what I think is a more accurate context for it. Just as Sonic 2 was happening, basically Sega went, right, let's really get this promoted, let's really manage our brand here. And for whatever reason, here is what happened next in different regions. In the UK, the brand was just really, 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 really well managed. We had novels. We had, like, this handbook that was just, like, information about Sonic and who he is.
Sonic.
The comic. And it all followed the backstory that Sega of America, oddly enough, had come up with that tied everything together. Here's the story of it. Sonic is blue because Sonic and his friend the scientist were trying to rid the world of evil, and then various things went wrong, and to cut a long story short, Sonic ran so fast he turned blue, and the scientist got all the evil of the world gone into him, and he turned into Dr. Robotnik. Mm. And in various ways, this kind of propped up the world of the games, which, unlike in, say, the Mario games, where it's like, here's some iconic stuff, mushrooms, question marks. In Sonic, it was all really, really weird and left field, but had this sort of... It kind of felt a bit more like a place and like things were connected together in some way.
For me, the use of a very early issue, the origin of Sonic, the one you're talking about right now, I want to say issue 7 or 8?
8.
8. That wasn't the first Elsa one, was it? Because the Megamac one was before. The Megatox was earlier, right?
I couldn't tell you which was... I think it's the Supersonic one might have been his first one.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember having this book when I was a kid, called Sonic the Hedgehog Spin Attack.
Yes.
And it collected 4 Sonic stories. And first one was Death Egg Summit, something by Ferran Rodriguez, Danger at the Death Egg, or some stupid thing like that.
I can't remember the name, but I know the one you mean.
Attack of the Death, I don't know. Anyway, it was fine. But the next story was The Origin of Sonic.
Mm.
And it's like, what the hell is this art? What's happening to my mind? It's like when you first listen to like Duke or Dark Side of the Moon. That's what it was like.
Yeah, it was another level.
It was like the first time I heard Future Sex Love Sounds. Anyway, it's insane. Richard Elson at his just absurd detail, absurd depth of color. Just incredible cartooning. Like, you can't fault it.
He didn't need to work as hard as he did and make as good of a thing as he did.
Later, he didn't go that hard, and it was still amazing.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
Because after that moment, the comic kind of swerved in that direction and became well-drawn.
Yeah, because after that story is the one where Sonic comes back from the Omniviewer and finds out he's missed like a few months or something.
6 months and
Robotnik's taken over the world in the meantime, thus setting up the entire arc for the next 94 issues.
Yes. Anyway, listen, I'm trying to finish my sentence, Stuart. So,
I don't want you to. I want this to last forever.
What happened in this country is that for some reason it was really, really well managed, and we had those novels and we had those comics and everything. And then for some reason, what happened in America is they just didn't tell anyone about any of this stuff, even though it was their idea. And so there was this little mini comic that came out that had the story in. And I think some of which, or like the key bit of which, was then rerun in a Disney comic or something like that.
Adventures, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And then after that, that was it, because then Deke made their cartoon, and for whatever reason, the Archie series, the mini series that was like based on that, was the one that took off, and so that Archie happened there. So,
were Adventures and Saturn running concurrently? That's so confusing, though.
I know.
I was confused when I was watching Adventures as a child on Channel 4 at 6:25 a.m. I believe every Saturday morning. I never missed one.
No.
And all of a sudden, one day, after the episode Super Robotnik, It was suddenly Sat AM with no explanation.
Yeah.
And I was like, but where's the jokes?
See, that didn't surprise me at all.
Why is Tails acting like this? What's happening?
Sonic the Comic had warned us that there was, well, not warned us, like excited us about the fact that there were going to be two Sonic cartoons.
It hadn't warned me, because I wasn't reading it.
No, but I was. So I knew that there was a series two. So I was waiting for the day. When's it going to switch over? And then it did, and I was all excited. Mm. But that is what it did. They played, like, through adventures, or at least loads of it, and then they switched to Sat AM.
No announcement.
Sonic.
No announcement. No continuity announcement. Not even like coming up next on Channel 4. Your childhood ruined. I favour Avengers over Sat AM. I just want to make that clear at this point. I'm not a fan of Sat AM, although I do respect to some extent the people who are, but only a very small extent.
Oh, and I ought to declare as well, we have this running gag. If any of you listen to my podcast or are going to after this, we have a running gag where we're like anti-Archie, but it's kind of a... Well, what it is it's a bit, but also it's us accurately reflecting how we used to feel and making fun of ourselves for our ridiculousness.
So it's a joke, but it's also exactly what you actually think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But so please nobody feel offended when you hear me refer to the artists. That is a joke. No, I was very excited when I heard about Archie on the internet in those days, and like people, like fellow teenagers, sent me a few issues. I'm like, wow, there's another Sonic comic. Mm. Anyway, but yes, the Sonic comic we got, and this is the point, was not based on the cartoon. It was based on Sonic the Hedgehog, and we think it's weird that the American comic wasn't based on Sonic the Hedgehog. Whereas ours was, and that makes sense to us. It's not weird when our comic adapts the games.
It's very weird when ours did.
Mm. Yeah, it is, and it shouldn't be.
Bobby, did you ever encounter Sonic the Comic?
And this is all
how did you encounter it?
A lot more respect than I let on.
Yeah, so I can kind of be the voice of the American perspective on STC. There's some people out there who have some really warped ideas of what happens at STC on this side of the pod.
Don't get me started.
I know we could go on a long tangent about this. I didn't have that much exposure to it online, except for like two things. Number one, it's the one where Super Sonic is evil, and people thought that was like the coolest thing. And number two, people will complain about Sonic being too mean. And I know we can have a discussion about this. I don't know if we will. Mm. I don't think that's fair. It's you know, it's out of context, just like how you can take...
Well,
Sonic is such a jerk in the early Archie comics, too. It's not.
It's just, I mean, in England, that's just, as you've seen, that's how we communicate.
Talk to each other, yeah.
Yeah. We'll just bust each other's balls about everything.
Yeah.
I never understood that idea, because I always find like, so what, you want Sonic just to be the guy who goes like, yo, I'm cool, I'm gonna save the planet, hi there, I don't like you, Amy, bye. That, like, what do they want? Like, why do they not want Sonic to be interesting? What's the problem with that? I mean, there's always the issue that they take out of context where poor Lewis is leaving the team because he's got too much anxiety. He's having... It's really mature.
It's a story about anxiety.
Yeah. And Sonic is acting out because he doesn't want his friend to leave, and he's sad, so he's busting his chops.
Because he's a boy, he can't show his emotions. So he starts out by like being mean to him, and then if you keep reading,
He's Sonic, he can't show his emotions.
Yeah. Well, because we covered that one recently, and it's actually... It's an amazing piece of writing.
Yes, it is, sure.
And it's about, like, Sonic the Hedgehog is like the hero of the time, where he's cool and he's got this attitude and he has to appear aloof and he has to appear in charge and not needing anyone's help.
Yeah.
And that is that's toxic masculinity. We call that now. Mm-hmm. And we struggle to to make people see that a lot of the panels that do get shared around and do appear to be like a mean Sonic saying something mean are often either the start of a story arc, which, and again, lasts seven or sometimes only five pages. Mm-hmm. Or now, to be fair, in a couple of cases, are either the way British male friends talk to each other, the bit where Sonic turns to camera and says, "I don't much like the look of your face either, but I don't say of your face either, but I don't talk about it." That is a joke, and it's a kind of a mean joke, but that's how we joke.
There is always that panel that me and you vastly disagree on, and you're wrong and I'm right about.
And you're wrong and I'm right about.
Sorry, but I'm afraid that in fact you're wrong.
Yes,
and I'm right.
And I'm going to allow you to be right because this is your podcast, and I can be right about it on mine.
Okay, well, you can be right about it on yours, but you'll be wrong about being right.
Mm.
it's the panel where Tails says, like, where he says, like, saving you, Tails, was just, and Tails says a bonus, and Sonic says, not when I think about it, no. Because Dave thinks, because he's insane, that he's saying, not when I think about it, no, and saying, you're not even, like, a bonus. Mm. You're nothing. But what is actually true is nothing that Sonic has realized that he's gone too far, and he is backpedaling and saying, not when I think about it. No,
I love you, really. The way that anyone in history has ever said, not when I think about it.
He's out of his mind. He's out of his mind. I can't understand this. But I promise you, at some point in the future, because of this, disused car park, on fire bins, lighting, me and him, no shirts, knives, stabbing each other to death. And as we die, I will say, you know what, Dave, you're probably right. This doesn't really matter anyway.
Yeah, and I'll say, not when I think about it, no.
And then immediately it would ignite the hate once again.
The remainder of this podcast is going to be this feud.
Like, this is all we're talking about now.
The actual reason that that one is significant as one of the propaganda pieces posted around to show how STC writes Sonic wrong is that that one's just not that well written. It's not that good of a panel. Like,
it's
just not that good. There are ones that aren't that good, so, and we have to admit that.
Let's talk about early ones written by Mr. Mark Miller.
Mark Miller, the author of the first several episodes. Yeah.
Excellent comics. The Unfunnies, Nemesis, the cop killing cyber goons. I made that one up. Kick ass.
Yeah.
And it's many sequels. And that's it. He's not. Oh, yeah. Kingsman, the Secret Service. Although when he made it, it was just called the Secret Service.
But
in bloody Hollywood.
Never mind any of that, because his best work is the adaptation of Streets of Rage in Sonic the Comic. It just is. It's so good.
Have you read Trouble, the comic about Mary Jane? No, not Mary Jane.
No, I have not.
Aunt May.
Aunt May, yes.
As a teenager.
Should I?
There's a panel of Aunt May with, like, no, never mind, let's not talk about it. It's disgusting. It's awful. It's a dreadful work.
Yeah.
It is a bad work. Anyway, because we're already nearly 2 hours in and we haven't even talked about IDW, STC, what did it offer us in terms of memorable arcs? We had, I mean, let's face it, the best arc of Return of Chaotix.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone can deny that. That was the story in which, let's see what happens in that story. The Metallics go back in time.
The Metallics are
Metal Sonic, by the way.
Yes, when Metal Sonic was introduced, for whatever reason, they called it Metallics instead of
Much
Metal
cooler
Sonic.
Name.
Just Metal a cooler Sonic. Name. And we admit they did that they is did
the
weird.
Sonic,
but
the Sonic CD adaptation, the Sonic Terminator.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was that was a great arc.
Very good arc. Yeah.
And then there was the next in the arcs was the Sonic 3 and Knuckles run, which was a long time of the comic was dedicated to just doing bits of that story, and it came to a big head, and it was amazing.
What about that big double splash page of the Death Egg crashing? Come on.
Heck. Oh, it was amazing. It was the only time they'd done a double page spread, and it was Sonic falling through the sky, clutching onto the Master Emerald, I think, while in the background, the Death Egg and the floating island shoot at each other, because in this, the floating island can shoot big beams of energy and stuff, and a load of egg robos flying through, and Richard Elson, of course. It was amazing.
Yeah, brilliant piece, yeah.
Just amazing, like that. When you and it's big, the thing is. So STC physically quite large.
Quite a big comic,
Yeah, more like a big magazine than a little comic. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then, yes, there was the Brotherhood of Metallics story in which Metallics was Daleks now, and there was loads of them, and an Emperor one, and they went back in time.
The Emperor Metallics is Project Chaotix from Chaotix, basically, the big red Metallics.
Sort of. It doesn't look much like it. It's slightly
It looks almost exactly like it.
Yeah, does it?
Oh, yeah, generally it does. It does look a lot like it.
Well, it hasn't got the big jaw.
It doesn't have the big chair, but you don't see its legs anyway, so it could be in the chair.
I suppose it could be.
In theory. But yeah, it's that.
Anyway, it's that. And but what they do is they go back in time, and the Chaotix are there for this. They don't really matter, but the Metallics go back in time, and they steal the egg, right? That's what they do. They steal the egg that all the evil went through and hit Robotnik, or hit Dr. Kinterbor, and turned him into Robotnik in the first time. So in the first place, so Sonic the Hedgehog has to go back in time, put the egg back, and just for good measure, pull a cable on the floor so that Kinterbor trips, turns into Robotnik. Like, Sonic has to do
it. He create has to his own arch enemy.
Dr. Robotnik to save the world from a worse thing in the form of the Brotherhood of Metallics. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Running Wild, which is the one that I think the internet knows best. That's the
dark
one
and edgy.
Because it's all dark and edgy, where Sonic as Super Sonic. He loses control of Super Sonic, stays Super Sonic for ages, and wants to kill everybody.
And seems to do so.
Mm. It's
there is
really
that,
cool.
There is that sequence where he shoots the tornado out of the sky. It's not called the tornado at the time, is it?
No.
Seemingly murders Johnny Lightfoot, Big Rabbit, and Amy Rose, Small Hedgehog. And then there's a full page of him laughing maniacally
as he changes back into
normal Sonic. And then the last page of him standing in the middle of the wreckage and going, oh no, what have I done?
What have I done?
And then the next panel is him in a pub.
Yeah, because he's given
what
up.
What would you do if you murdered everyone you loved? You'd go down the pub.
Well, I think he's gone down a pub far away where he's sort of undercover, isn't he? He's like hiding away, drinking himself to death. That was an experience reading that all that stuff. And then after that, Flicky's Island happened. Sonic 3D happened.
Then the final victory happened.
Oh, yeah.
We can't not talk about the final victory.
Issue 100, right, was where for the...
A big, long story. Sorry, I'm talking over you. I'm sorry.
Well, you were going to say the same thing. For the first time ever in the comic, the fact that they'd been running multiple different strips about different Sonic characters, you started to get the sense that, wait a minute, these are all heading in a direction.
They're all converging slowly, yes.
Yeah, and when you get to issue 100, it's a whole comic of which that's normal to Archie readers. We've never had it before, a whole comic of one story.
They had the different stories like Sonic, Knuckles, but they were all just a continuation of this story, The Final Victory, in which they liberate Mobius. Is it called Mobius in this world? I forget.
Yeah.
They liberate Mobius from Robotnik's. He no longer rules. They capture him.
Yeah. He's been the dictator there for a long time. And during that time, those first 100 issues, like, there's a lot of... They don't shy away from the sort of fascist regime imagery. There was one issue that we've covered recently where some big trooper badniks, which are just like soldiers.
They're like Wolfenstein robots, I would say. Yeah.
They kick down the door of these innocent villagers and the villagers are going like, what? We've done nothing wrong. And the robots go, everyone is guilty of something. Take them away. And you're like, well, okay. And...
Robotnik.
So that they sorted that out. They liberate the planet from Robotnik.
Yeah, and then after that, the comic spins its wheels for a while.
It's like an Archie.
But it does a bit. I loved it, though.
Yeah, because Archie, they killed him, didn't they?
They sure did.
Mm.
Yeah, I won't get into that too long because we've already talked about Archie
I know that there was a lot of silliness going on around that. It's one of the major differences between STC and Archie that I feel like I have to address.
Mm.
In Archie, there's always a convoluted reason for everything that happens. Like, Amy needs to change to her modern designs. So they have her touch the Master Emerald or something, or a Chaos Emerald, and transform.
It was a special ring, and it was all this drama where it's like, oh, yeah, Sally's mom is in a coma and they need that ring to save her. Yeah. And then Amy uses it up to wish that she's older. It's like, oh boy.
Yes.
I love that, because all that Amy needs to do to have her new look is comb her hair and put her different clothes on.
Yeah.
But the problem was that, like, they'd written themselves into a corner, because I guess they were like, oh, Sonic Adventure's coming up. We need to bring back Amy, who had never been in the comics like at all, except occasionally as this little kid who likes Sonic. And now they're like, oh, crap, she's supposed to be older now. They retconned that. We need to magically age her up.
Didn't they just have her come back the number of years older that she would have been in real? Because years had passed since then.
Because then you can't do that, because then it implies that Morris the Hedgehog has grown older.
Right, yeah.
But then the main one I want to point out, because it fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
In order to you can actually feel free to jump in on this, Dave, because you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Phil, in order to transform Robotnik or Eggman into his Sonic Adventure form,
mm-hmm,
Archie has him go into an egg. Am I wrong? And rejuvenate and hatch as the new Robotnik. Is that correct? Something along those lines?
No.
It's not that at all. I'm mixing it up with Sonic.
No, that's STC, isn't it? Yeah.
How do they change him from Robotnik to Eggman in Archie? I'm sure it was convoluted.
It was. In the Archie comics, he had died at issue 50 at the climax of the Endgame arc, which was supposed to be the end of the series, because they're like, well, Zadam was canceled a while ago. Why are they still letting us make this comic? And then it didn't get canceled after all. So they're like, crap, what do we do? So they spent like 25 issues kind of exploring alternative story options. And then it gets to where they're going to have to adapt Sonic Adventure. And it's like, oh, Eggman's in that. We need him back. And Sega's like, you gotta add him back. So what they did was they brought in this previously introduced alternate timeline version of Robotnik from a timeline where he actually won. And basically they have him, they're like, well, he won, he killed Sonic and everyone, and now he's bored, so he comes over to the main timeline to do it again. But he's like roboticized in that version, so he uploads his consciousness to a backup body, which just happens.
Robo Robotnik.
Yeah, Robo Robotnik, which is a character that Penders now owns due to the lawsuits and everything. It's wild.
Sega better not use Robo Robotnik.
Well, I don't think they're gonna.
Yeah, but I mean, the point, I suppose, for me that I wanted to make is that the way they transformed Robotnik into Eggman in Sonic the comic is they had him put a jacket on.
Yeah,
it was one panel, incidental detail in the background. He is putting on a jacket because they only had 7 pages. Now this is what is called expedience,
and because that's the main difference. It's like he's just dressed differently.
One of my favorite things that I've ever done, and I'm sorry, no one's going to care about this, is I edited that panel so that he was wearing an NWO shirt. That, to me, is hilarious.
Oh, God.
But not to anyone else.
Speaking, coincidentally, in the Archie comics, in the shot of all the different backup bodies they have for Eggman, one of them is Hulk Hogan.
Amazing. So. Amazing. Yeah. He gets around Hulk Hogan, doesn't he? Just ask his best friend. Sorry. Anyway, so STC, that was good, wasn't it?
It was good. That was a good.
It was
comic.
A good comic, wasn't it?
The people who made it were. We don't have any controversial ones. We've just got bangers. They're just all really good.
Before we move on to IDW, which I think would be fairly fleeting. Is that fair to say? I would like to talk about Nigel Dobbin a bit.
Yeah,
who recently passed away, four years ago now.
Yeah.
Now, he would do the most, and I'm not saying this lightly, spectacular painted, watercolored knuckles strips.
You know, absolutely,
had a European touch of brightness, of use of space, like use of white space, mystical adventures that just, in my opinion, were the highlight of the comic. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever they would appear, whenever you got a knuckles strip, you were like, cool, I'm getting something atmospheric and incredibly imaginative now. And that's not just Dobbin, that is on Nigel Kitching as well, who was writing.
Oh yeah.
But
in terms of the art, you couldn't have found a more appropriate artist.
No.
Unless you got Mobius to do it or something. You know what I mean? Like,
I wasn't going to mention Mobius because I thought maybe that's a bit too much to compare him to, but it's not, is it? He is that good.
That's the sort of art that Nigel Dobbin did. There was on his very first one that he did for STC, which was one of the poster mags, there's a bit where there's just a sort of a carriage that some animals are being led into to be turned into badniks. And it is the most ornate. The way he draws it is incredible. And he did not need to. Same as with when Richard Ellison came out the gate with what he does. It's like, wow, this comic, what we've had up till now, which was just this like anyone draw a little mouse guy running around. Like, it didn't need this level of quality, but now it's always going to have it. And it did. Yeah, what Nigel Dobbin was doing was you couldn't have found a more appropriate artist for the concept of there is a flying island that's a bit anime, but we're going to make it a bit European, like comic album as well. And we don't know what's on it. Let's explore it. He's from there. There's places to go and things to see. And it's strange and it's ancient and it's mystical. Mm. That's what Nigel Dobbin had in his blood. And he was able to just do that.
Yes. There was no point at which his work was disappointing or lazy or spinning wheels. He was perfect. 5 pages of perfection.
Yeah.
Like, and it sounds like we're overselling it because he's died. We're not. Like, no, we would say this when he was alive.
This is how we used to talk about him anyway. Yeah.
I'm very glad that I met him at one of the Sonic Commons before. You know, I was pretty privileged to have met him. Yeah, I got a sketch from him and I can't remember what. No, I didn't get a sketch from him. He just signed something. I got a sketch from Nigel Kitching. Mm-hmm. He was incredible. I want to talk about Decap Attack, but it's not Sonic. So I feel like it should be really brief. There was also a Decap Attack strip that was.
That's a game. You won't
remember it. Decap Attack is a terrible Mega Drive game, a really crap Mega Drive game. And people are going to be like, it's not crap. It's terrible. Come on. It's like Psycho Fox. It's uncontrollable.
It's a Halloween-y game, wasn't
it? A Halloween-y game. So basically what you had the characters, which was Chuck D. Head, which is a pun, obviously, on Chuck the Head. Because that's what he did. He threw a head at people.
Which was skull.
It was this big, skull. A big bandage-wrapped like fella, and his little orange head poking out of the bandages, like a little hench fella. There was Igor, who was this little green sidekick to Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And then there was Head, who was the skull, who would sit on top of Chuck's back, basically, or his head.
Because in the game, you threw the skull, or you punched things with your face.
With your face,
that would come out of
them. And what it essentially was a 5-page humor strip that really got out of hand.
Yeah.
Because they stopped caring about the game at all, and would just write some...
The first strip was basically Nigel Kitching, who was the writer of the really like big epic Sonic stories, also happens to be an absolutely brilliant cartoonist. Mm. And he was just able to do this hilarious Halloween... Like, it was just basically a take on the Frankenstein story, but with the characters from this game.
Yeah.
And then, quickly after that, they wanted another strip of that. So he's like, well, all right, now they're going to the Monster of the Year competition. But to get there, they have to go on a train. And we're just going to have like a Young Ones style 5 pages of jokes about being on a train. And then that's what it ended up being. It was just this, like, we'd all forgotten there was a game. It was just the backup strip in STC, where it was just these Halloween-y characters mucking about and being silly and Nigel Kitching being brilliant.
There's a strip, and I forget which issue it's in, and it's called Chuck's Savings. And to this day, I consider it one of the single funniest comic strips ever written.
Yeah.
When you get to it, it will bring you so much joy. It's quite late. But it is 5 pages of flawless brilliance. It's about these two crooked solicitors turn up at the castle and start insisting that everything must be paid for. Uh-huh. But what it essentially amounts to is just Chuck getting hurt a lot in funny ways, having things thrown at him.
Oh, is that the one with a whole page of stuff getting...
Yes, where he says, oh, you hit me with everything but the kitchen sink, and the last pun is a kitchen sink hitting him full force in the face.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an incredible comic strip. The weirdest thing was in one of them, they actually brought back Max Decap, the villain from Decap Attack, and it was really weird and jarring. It was like, get this out of the comic strip. What? Don't bring back the villain. from that. This is too confusing. Go back to like the Maltese budgies or something.
We're having to think about the game again.
Stop. Yeah, don't make us think about this horrible game. But anyway, yes, STC, something like the comic. Ooh, that were good.
Yeah.
Oh, before we end that, I implore you listeners, please read it. Please just read the comic. You can download it illegally from almost anywhere. And
it's barely illegal.
You have no legal recourse to read this comic besides going on eBay and buying all the issues, which cost about £8 an issue, and there are hundreds of them.
And the publishers don't make any money from that.
And nobody involved in it makes any money from it. No. So for God's sake, just pirate it. It's the only way you're going to be able to see it, and it's worth it.
And if I may say, I'm doing a podcast that you can listen to while you read it that you might enjoy. Details at the end of the episode.
Really pushing it, that, Dave. That's really pushing it. First you hold up your comic, and
that's right.
Now you're holding up my podcast.
Yep.
So anyway, after Archer got cancelled, just a year later, IDW, too much cheering within the fandom, picked up the reins, and they immediately set on the right track by saying, oh yeah, we got Ian Flynn, and yeah, Tracy Yardley's going to be penciling, you know, two of the fan favourites from Archie. But now, let me preface this by saying, I like IDW. I have bought every issue of this comic. I think that the issues with IDW are largely issues with IDW and not with the actual stuff of this comic. Because my understanding is that they almost enforce decompressed storytelling editorially. Because everything in every IDW comic that I have read has been clearly written for trade and spaced out as such as well. Now, that's not abnormal for the modern comics industry, but in Sonic, because there was so little dialogue in some of the issues, I felt like it was more than usual. Like, the Metal Virus story arc really did seem to go on forever.
You know, that's interesting
months
because...
Months and months.
I was given the impression that was a very, very long story, presumably by people who'd read it in that way. And I read it in the trades, and I was surprised.
It would not seem nearly as bad in the trades.
No, I was surprised to find that it was like, oh, it's a couple of books, and there you go. That seemed like a fairly easy length.
Do you read, Bobby? Do you read much of IDW? Have you got any?
I've been reading it since it came out.
Cool.
I mean, I think I'll definitely go to bat for the Metal Virus arc personally. I can see the complaints about the length, and I definitely think that the series is being written for the trade. I mean, you can see everything is like a 4-issue arc or a sequence of 4 issues arcs. We're only now starting to get stories where it's like, here's just 1 issue and this is the story in that issue. Yeah. That's very much an editorial thing. But personally, I thought, cards on the table. I read One Piece, so I am used to extremely long serialized comics. I'll be like, oh yeah, this arc is 140 chapters. It's great. It's perfect. But I thought they were able to sell the stakes of the Metal Virus arc better because it was longer. They had compressed it to like 4 or 8 issues, I think it would have been, oh well, this thing that's over.
I think it is a case of perspective in a way, because I was reading it month to month, and it did feel like, because you'd read the issue in like 10 minutes max.
Yeah.
I'm a very fast comic reader. And I wouldn't really pore over it that much. I felt very much like, oh my God, please get on with this story. Because you've got multiple issues that were essentially just a character gets turned into a robot. Like, something bad happens. And it was almost depressing how often they did that. But then, of course, you need that to establish, why aren't these characters coming to assist? Why aren't these characters here? Mm-hmm. And reading in trade or reading with that kind of perspective, I can totally see that. That makes total sense to me. I mean, I'm just like that they introduced Tangle and Whisper because I really like Tangle and Whisper.
Oh, for sure.
Mm. They're great. They got their own miniseries that was genuinely very entertaining as well. But they're just a lot of fun, and they really fit in with the other established Sonic characters, I think.
They're great, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
The IDW comics, I guess we kind of forgot to say what they are, is they pick up from Sonic Forces, which is the latest new Sonic game.
So, yes, but they can't say that. Am I right? They can't say that.
They can't reference too much from Forces because Sega... We could go in a million tangents about Sega Band-Aids.
They sort of want things to exist in a bubble. Is that fair to say? Like they want the comics to be their own bubble? Or?
Oh, well, perhaps I shouldn't have said Sonic Forces then. I don't mean to undermine them in it.
No, well, it is set after Sonic Forces, but it's more like Sega kind of views each Sonic thing as its own thing, and then they kind of move on from that. So, like, it's set after the takeover of the planet in Sonic Forces, but they don't want to reference specific events from the games too much, and it's partially just like, well, it's a comic for kids. They don't want to be like, oh, did you not play the game? Well, then you're not going to know what's going on. So there's some oddities there.
Well, what it does do is it unlike Archie, and even, you know, even more than STC, it is like, here is the world the way it was you last saw it in a Sonic game, basically. Mm-hmm. Including something that I think of as uniquely Forces, which is that there's like resistance cells and things like this, and this metal virus was basically after a few, few trades worth, after three or four trades worth, they started doing The Walking Dead, but Sonic.
Yeah.
But with like roboticization.
I'm not saying I found it upsetting, but the one where Cream's mum gets roboticized is genuinely quite
harrowing.
Well,
that's the thing. It's very...
Yeah.
It doesn't shy away from being quite harrowing, the way you see characters being engulfed while their loved ones are having to be held back by their friends from diving in and getting infected themselves. This is why I said Walking Dead.
That's the thing, is it is Walking Dead, because the only difference is that no one's getting their neck munched. It's essentially the same thing.
They're just turning into robots because there's a virus that Robotnik...
I'd say it's probably better than The Walking Dead.
Oh, better than Walking Dead, yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's saying much at this point, but...
I read the whole of The Walking Dead comics, and I can't say I am glad that I did.
I got a certain way and then went, that'll do.
Yeah, it was a good 40 or 50 odd issues that were worth reading for me. Mm. But then, same thing over and over again, really. Anyway, not Walking Dead. I would say personally, as far as IDW is concerned, I would say that it's hit its stride now, but it took a long wait to get. Like the last issue I read, I want to say 49.
Yeah, that's late.
Is leading into an interesting climax with the new characters Surge and Blue Guy
Kit. Yeah,
because they've really sold the whole Surge is going to beat up Sonic's face thing with some really cool covers and stuff of them facing each other down, and the only sad thing is, because I know that as editorial mandate directly from Sega, Sonic can never lose.
Well,
he was never going to lose, obviously, it's Sonic, but I just really hope that there is some kind of good fight. You know, I would like to see it develop nicely because it's built it up really nicely. They built it up really well. The last issue I read, the one with the I don't want to spoil it, with what happens to the puppet character, the Belle. Pinocchio character, Belle, I thought was interesting, if telegraphed, but still interesting. And I just want them to keep the stride that they've got. I'm just really hoping that it will continue. Now, overall, I would say that even when I wasn't feeling the story, the art's been consistently good. I'm not just saying that because Abby is involved.
Yes.
What
the IDW comic did for the modern Sonic designs, nothing else managed to do, which is that it made me really like them. I was one of the people who was very skeptical about the modern Sonic designs. I never quite thought that I liked them. And then IDW went round and just sort of rounded up the people in the world who can best represent those designs and go like, look what we can do with them.
Yeah.
It sort of brings a kind of, like we were talking earlier about how like the Sonic fan community creates amazing things.
Yes.
In a way, IDW can be thought of as sort of like the cream of that. Like they've gathered some of the best people crowd and gone like there.
There's a lot of modern Sonic that is ascended fans, you know, like Tyson Hess working on the Sonic movies, and he was drawing. I mean, I remember when he was making your sprite comic called Sonic R-A-R-G-H. I remember when he was making Boxer Hockey, and I loved it. I mean, you'd never think that guy would go on to be one of the leading creative forces. And I'm so glad that he did.
What, he's one of the best people that's ever drawn Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, his drawings of Sonic are some of the best ones anyone's ever done. It's amazing what he does.
But, I mean, he did that meme comic about Nipples the Enchilada.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
That was kind of where it came from, right? That was when he crossed over and everyone started thinking of him as a Sonic guy, the way I remember it.
Well, and I mean, I'd always thought that because I read his sprite comic back when it was new on... on SciGuy, the disgraced pedophile SciGuy's website.
Oh, God,
disgraced
pedophile SciGuy.
Yeah. I used to talk to him on IRC in 1997 or whenever it was.
You used to talk to the disgraced pedophile SciGuy?
I did talk to the disgraced pedophile SciGuy, yeah.
Okay, sorry, we have to say it every time.
I assume it's the same one, but he was a green Sonic with swirling.
Yeah, that's him. That's him, his character Psycho, don't look up his stuff.
No.
He's bad, but he is important, unfortunately, to Sonic fandom. Yes, Sonic R, the sprite comic. Good Lord.
So glad I wasn't involved in Sonic fandom during that era. I only have vaguely heard about this in retrospect, and it's like, really?
I was involved in Sonic fandom during that era. Oof.
Yeah, I was out there making sprite comics at the time, so...
I made sprite comics. I made many... hundreds of issues of sprite comics, and I won some incredibly specific forum-based awards for them. So, and if you want to buy them from my online shop, you can. And I put the price up every week because I don't want anyone to buy them. Anyway, moving on. Other Sonic comics. What are there? Because there is the one you stated, the promotional one, the original American promotional one. Mm-hmm. There is manga. I'm not sure if there's an ongoing specific manga.
I don't believe there is.
Or just the occasional odd Sonic manga. But other than that, I mean, those are pretty much the only game in town. I mean, you mentioned prior to the record that there was... Bobby, you mentioned prior to the record that there was a French Sonic comic or something?
Yeah, I was going
to
say, that wicked French one.
Yeah. And that comes out, once every... whenever they feel like it, I don't know.
Comes out? Is that an ongoing thing?
I have absolutely no idea.
It was like a one-time thing, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really? Okay, just a one-time 90s. Thing. I did not realize. Was it like one of those... bande dessinée is what they call them. That's comic albums, word, like I know, but I was just trying to get some culture into this.
Oh, sorry, I torpedoed it, but yeah, sorry.
It's okay, it's fair enough. When I try and sound cultured, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if a walrus went to the Tate Modern or something, this wouldn't be wanted. They'd have to hose them until they left. And then someone would walk past and they would go, that's a really interesting exhibit. And they go, oh, no, actually, that's just the walrus that we're hosing down. It's not actually art. See, what I did there is I did a humorous bash at modern art in a very boomerish sort of way.
boomer, like the walrus boomer who became...
Oh, Jesus.
...in art. Mm. See, it's good. It's a good reference.
You ever seen that storybook where Rota walks out of a door holding Robotnik's clothes?
No.
Oh, it's really funny because it implies that he's just stripped Robotnik.
Taken all of Robotnik's clothes off.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to? Robotnik is pure confidence. I mean, how is that not sexy? But anyway, moving on again. So there aren't really any other major Sonic comics other than fan works, of which there are several trillion.
Mm-hmm. Tails Gets Trolled, one of the best fan comics on the internet.
I sort of lost it. I got a bit to a point where I was like, yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get the joke now. I think I'm going to stop reading this.
Yes, now you say that, I realize I stopped reading and it continued on. So maybe it's full of bad things now and I shouldn't endorse it. But those first four, it was good at first.
It was very funny.
As far as I got, it was really good.
The one where Shadow and Tails and Sonic like bury a body is still one of the funniest things I've seen.
Oh, High Shovels is one.
I don't recall. Yeah, High Shovels. That was the one. That was the one.
Amazing moment.
I don't recall whether it contains copious amounts of slurs, though.
No, it, like, it probably does, doesn't it? I just remember. Yeah. I just remember those panels where Kermit the Frog is increasingly small with the huge speech balloons coming out of him. It was so good.
Yeah. Telltale's Troll, the best comic we've discussed today, by some distance.
Yeah, unless it's full of slurs that we've forgotten.
Yes, in which case,
I'm fairly sure it probably is.
I would have thought
it came from the Edgelord era of the internet, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. Yes. Hang on, I'm going to scroll down on my notes. Oh, there's nothing. Okay. I would say that caps off this episode at quite a long time again. Sorry, listeners. Unless we have any sort of final thoughts at all that we want to put out there about the future of Sonic comics. Do we have any of those?
Well, it's very difficult to know because, although apparently it's not ever specifically stated, the IDW world resembles the last game that they brought out. Mm. And the thing about Sega bringing out Sonic games is that every time they do it, it's like the other games never existed these days. Yeah. You know, they're all so different to each other. And we're just now, as we record this, starting to see the first images and brief snippets of animation and whatnot from what the next Sonic game is going to be, which looks like it's going to be a sort of Breath of the Wild type Sonic game, which probably isn't going to resemble the one before it. So we don't know what has to happen to comics to do with that, whether Sega will suddenly go like, everything has to look like this now.
Well, of course, the interesting thing there is that Ian Flynn is the one writing the new game. So it's a question of, will they allow him to kind of, will he even want to steer it in a direction where the IDW comic status quo will be safe? Mm. Or will it be like, no, we want to go in this direction, so you should write a script that allows us to do that?
Yes. And he has experience of steering a Sonic series in a sudden new direction. So
definitely.
He may well be able to pull that off.
I'm excited now. I think it could be good.
Yeah.
He might introduce Tangle and Whisper into the game continuity. Now, wouldn't that be something? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
But it could. You know, they've appeared.
They're in Sonic, the stupid, crappy phone game that sucks. They have to pay for everything.
It means that legally they've crossed that barrier. So they could. They could appear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Don't know. That's the thing. We don't know the reality of it. We don't know much about how games are made. What we don't know is Ian Flynn writing this game in the sense that they go to him and say, what should happen next, Ian? Or is he writing the game in the sense that here's the game, write down some words for them to say while this level goes
on. What does it mean to write a game?
Well, it means different things per game.
Then you write down, like, now Mega Man does a jump and he lands on a girder.
So, like, you know,
there's a little construction hat on the girder.
Like, I mean, think about Sonic Colors, you know, the quote-unquote writing.
No, I'd rather not.
Okay, but the quote-unquote writing.
I hate the writing in that game. It drives me crazy.
Is Robotnik doing quips over a level.
Yeah, and you can't hear them. You can't hear them over the music.
No. But you know what I mean? That's a sort of games writing, and we don't know which one this game is going to have. Or it could be that Ian Flynn was the first person at the top of the team to say, like, here's what this game's going to be about. We don't know. It's different for every game.
And, you know, Sonic Colors, I played that on the Wii, and I was like, hey, this is pretty good. I kind of like it. It's a shame that it's not on one of the other consoles, so it could be, like, HD and, like, 60 frames per second, et cetera, et cetera. And then they released it in HD, 60 frames per second on the other consoles, and I was like, oh, this is actually shit. I was just distracted by the fact that it was on the Wii.
Yeah, but didn't they not get it right in some way?
No, well, I mean, there were some errors, but by and large, it was the same game, and I feel like making it all sparkly really highlights some of the shortcomings. I'd not say it's not shit. It's okay. It's okay. I guess it's okay. But I'm not here to review Sonic games. Why would I ever do that on Retronauts? It's absurd.
Silly idea.
We're talking about comics, and now we have officially done that.
Yes.
And we have, really. I feel like we should bring things to a satisfying close. So I'm going to now ask you individually about what your things is. So, Bobby, hello. Yes. Thank you very much for being on Retronauts. I'm sorry that me and Dave talked so much.
No, it's totally fine. Thanks for having me.
What do you do that listeners can go and look at?
So I'm on Twitter at Ponet Plus. As previously mentioned, I run the blog Thanks Ken Penders, which is relevant to what we've discussed, where I go through all the Archie comics and write way too many words about all of them. But that blog is on hiatus because I am currently finishing a video game, which is out later this year.
Yes. So,
can't wait for that. What's the video game? You must tell us.
So the video game is titled, and nobody listed again the ideas about the title. It's titled Super Lesbian Animal RPG. It's totally PG-13. Don't worry about it. I always get comments. And I think if people enjoy the Archie Sonic comics, they might enjoy my game with this little blend of fantasy and anthropomorphic animals and all that stuff. So yeah,
There's a demo, isn't there,
there's a demo on itch.io. you can find the links on my Twitter and everything, so yeah. I won't drag out a plug any longer, so.
I haven't played it because I just wanted to wait for the full release, because I was essentially sold when I saw the visuals. I was like, that looks great, that looks colorful and just fun. Thanks. And I assumed it would be good anyway. And I'm sure it will be. I'm very much sure it will be. Dave.
Hello.
Tell us all the things that you do, please, and where people can find you on the internet.
Well, I do Sonic the Comic, the podcast. It's out every 2 weeks, and it's about the comic that we talked about from Britain today. And you will probably enjoy that. You'll find that at STCTP. Sonic the Comic, the podcast, stctp.wigglehe.com. But just look for the name. You'll find it. Sonic the Comic, the podcast. Try not to get it off one of the weird websites that rehosts people's podcasts. You'll find it. It's at Sonic Podcast on Twitter. Weirdly enough, we're the first people to register that, and we did it in 2019. I don't know why nobody had got that before. But I'm there as at Demon Tomato Dave, and that's where I post everything else that I do. You'll see the rest of it there.
It's an exciting video, man.
Yeah, Demon Tomato Dave on YouTube, things like that. But listeners to this episode will be most interested in Sonic the Comic Podcast. Yes. Bobby's blog is like the definitive look through the Archie comics, as far as I'm concerned. And we're trying to do the definitive look through the British comics.
Yeah, I definitely sent some people your way. So
I really, really want to. I'm going to have to reread that blog. I need to get it in some kind of form where I can read it sequentially. AKA clicking on the last page and going backwards, I guess. But yes, it's very good. As for me, I'll keep it brief. You can find me on Twitter as Chupacabra, but I don't recommend reading my tweets because they are in one of two genres, bad or mental. I do a webcomic called Mary Hell. It's at maryhellcomic.com. It's on hiatus at the moment. It's coming back in June. And also I do Retronauts, which you're listening to right now. So yeah, cheers. I also do the podcasts, Animania Chat, which is about me watching Animaniacs, which I hate to death. So I just get angry every episode, basically. Though, spoiler alert, in recent episodes, I have come to begrudgingly appreciate it for what it does. So there was definite character development on my part there. I also do a podcast called The Dillcast, where we review every single Dilbert comic ever. One Dilbert comic per episode for the rest of our lives. You may be thinking, Stu, why don't you do podcasts about things you like at some point? And that's a very valid question. I have no good answer for it. So thanks. And if you enjoy Retronauts, as you've surely enjoyed this one, you would like to become a Patreon of Retronauts, where you can get all these cool things for just $5 per month, which, I want to get this, from you guys. $5 a month is not that much money, right? It's quite a small amount of money. I mean, not for everyone, obviously. There are exceptions here. But would you say, generally speaking, that $5 per month is a lot of money? Because I objectively would say it's not.
No, it's an incredible value for money.
Thank you, Dave. What do you think, Bobby? Would you say it was a small amount of money, broadly speaking?
Yeah.
There we go. That's it. $5 per month gets you not one, not three, that would be ridiculous. Two, full-length Patreon-exclusive episodes per month. That's insane.
That is loads.
That's so much, especially when you consider how long these podcasts can get.
Yeah.
Well, then none of them are as long as me and as my ones ever. It just doesn't happen. But that's because they don't have as much interesting stuff to say.
Yeah, exactly.
But also for those $5, you will be accessing a mini podcast and column by Diamond Fight, who is excellent. And they are doing This Week in Retro, which is a series of extremely interesting essays that they've written. I highly recommend that you go and put $5 into the Retronauts pot, because if you don't, you're not going to get those exclusive episodes. Oh, and also, you get early access to the weekly ones as well, so you can get in the conversation early before everyone's tuned out. Like, you come into this and you can be there the day it comes out, and you can be like, oh yeah, here's my thoughts about Sonic comics. Oh, those are interesting thoughts. Here's some of my thoughts that tie into your thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. You can't see it, but I'm doing typing. But then a week later comes out for, you know, the free scrubs who don't pay the $5 a month. You know, the people who I would cross the street to avoid, quite frankly. And they're all like, oh yeah, here's my thoughts about Sonic comics, and the cool people who pay $5 a month. They're like, yeah, we're talking about something else now, actually, because the new episode's out. We're talking about the new episode now, actually, yeah. So maybe don't come to us with this. You know, it's a bit cringe. And you know, most people's sales pitch for the Patreon is to be positive. Not me. I shame people until they pay up. $5 a month. That's not even. That's less money than a bagel, probably. I don't know. I'm not American.
Probably in New York.
That's less money than a Reuben,
yeah.
A pastrami on rye. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what those are.
See, then Dave doesn't even know what pastrami on rye is.
No.
If someone said that to him in the street, he'd start crying.
No, yeah, I'd fall apart. But the thing
pure is, logical thing, disconnect. That's
what I can tell you it's cheaper than a fish and chips.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is, especially with the price of cod these days.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, so that's the end of yet another ramshackle episode of Retronauts, which I think has been rather good and enjoyable. And I would like to say thank you again, Bobby Schroeder, for coming on the podcast. Perhaps we'll see you again sometime. That would be lovely. And thank you again, Dave, for coming on the podcast. We brought you out on the old wheelbarrow. Yeah. And you drunkenly joined in.
Yeah, with me. So, with me comics in.
Thanks very much. Thanks again. We'll be back soon. And I love you so much, listeners. You don't even know.